Let's get into that Fang experience real quick. The Big N and Fang, or Mang, as you call it, Netflix. How did that come about?
Got to Georgia Tech, got that experience right, got to the startup, got that cloud and SaaS app experience. From there, I'm like, yo, pinnacle, top of the top is Silicon Valley. I got the offer from Netflix. That was November or December of 2019.
So when you're looking to hire people, what are you looking for? Are you looking for more technical skill? Are you looking for more soft skills or a mixture of?
For example, we have a tier 2 role. What I'm looking for in that is someone who has experience in specific domains. So for example, right, if we were Google organization and we're getting ready to do a migration of users from Microsoft to Google or vice versa, I want somebody that has done that.
How you feel about boot camps and the influx of social media tech influencers?
There are situations, I would say. We have an individual that goes to a boot camp. They come in, they work, lack of a better term, exposed in terms of not having the technical knowledge that they should have as a result of going to said boot camp, and they end up losing the job, right? For me, as a black professional at, say, the executive or below level, right, knowing or seeing the trajectory and continuing to that, black people getting laid off or fired left and right, right? We constantly coming in these situations and we don't have the knowledge that we need, and it's being taken advantage of or exploited. For me, that's very predatory.
This video is being sponsored by Level Careers. It's 2024 and people are still having issues with getting in cybersecurity. If you're new to the channel, my name is Henry Davis and I am a cybersecurity career coach. The main issue that I see people struggling with is not their resume, but lack of cybersecurity skills. Input: Level Careers cybersecurity course taught by Josh Matacore. Now, this has been a course that I've recommended for plenty of people on my consultations and clients. And let me tell you, the results have been astounding. Some of the main reasons why you want to get into cybersecurity is because it's in high demand, job security, you can work remotely, and you're constantly learning new things. In 2021, the Bureau of Labor Statistics stated that the average salary for an information security analyst is $113,000. To get into cybersecurity, the link will be in the description. And use my code TEXTUAL10 to get 10% off your purchase. Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD. And we got another lovely guest for you guys today, Mr. Bryson. Y'all going to be in tune for a treat. This is going to be our, I think, like first or second, you know, IT manager director on here. So we're really going to give y'all some gems. But if you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google, Amazon Music, you know what to do. Leave us a review. Share it out. Help us out in the podcast analytics. And right now, if you're watching on YouTube, like, subscribe, hit all on the bell icon so you'll be notified we're dropping all content. And look, for real, a lot of y'all watching ain't subscribing, so I just need y'all to subscribe. And also, check out the Patreon. $2 to join. A lot of content that you will not find online, we have on the Patreon. And we can play music, whatever we want to do. We got a lot of stuff on there. But it's time to get into the episode. Bryson, how you doing, man?
Man, doing good. How you doing?
But yeah, man, let me get into these questions, man. First of all,
for having me, by the way.
Nah, anytime, man. I'm glad we got to do this. I'm glad we got to do this. What you call it?
Yeah,
this episode. So, first of all, I guess I want you to go ahead and intro yourself.
Yeah.
To the listeners. I mean, as long as you want your intro to be, by all means, you got it.
Yeah, I am Bryson Ross, Tech Disciple on IG. So follow me on IG. You know, for some daily tech tips, career tips. I am a IT professional with over 10 years of experience, currently an IT director. I have experience across, man, multiple domains, multiple technical domains, from startup to higher ed to Silicon Valley to consulting around, you know, venture capital led startups as well. Got a bunch of experience. So, hopeful and happy to share some of that today.
Bet. So now we were talking before this and you said you're from Memphis.
Yeah.
So you went, did you graduate high school from Memphis?
No, I went through elementary, halfway through middle school in Memphis, and then started high school in Mississippi. So
what kinda, part?
We were in Corinth. So we moved, my grandparents were in Corinth, Mississippi. It's like maybe like an hour from Memphis or so. That's where my dad's parents were living. So we ended up out there. Ended up, man, moving out there in ninth grade.
Is it a culture shock?
A little bit. Not too much. I had maybe like one or two cousins out there, so it wasn't too bad. You know, it was dope. It was a small city. You know how it is when a new kid, you know, kind of pop up. So it was a small town, small city vibe. So when I got there, you know, everybody was kind of interested. Like, yo, where you come from? You know, it was the culture shock aspect of it. I think I was playing football at Olive Branch, right? And, you know, you used to getting minutes on varsity, and we playing against, like, South Panola and all that, you know, to go from that to, you know, 3A, 2A at the time. And they're like, I think you should play defensive end. And I'm playing, you know, running back, receiver. I'm like, bro, I don't know about that, you know. So that was a big culture shock. Other than that, though, you know, school at the time, I wasn't interested in the school aspect, no way, at that time. But, yeah, originally from Memphis.
Got it. So going through high school, you came in around that time. Let me see. So you said your birthday in November?
Yeah.
So did Memphis do the thing where, like, if you're not a certain age before, like, September, then you would have to start school the following year?
No, they didn't do that. So what they had was they had that age-based, it was like a ranking thing or something where, of course, when we went to, when I was in Olive Branch area going to school, they had kind of like the sister schools. So the biggest school was like the 5A at the time, which was Olive Branch. Center Hill popped up as well. If you were in like a different age range, you'd go to a different school in the area, as opposed to going to the one, like, you know, that you were used to. So I got moved from Olive Branch to Center Hill, and this was my parents were like, nah, we just gonna head on now. Because Center Hill was kind of hinging on the backside of Olive Branch. So, yeah, a little different.
Okay. Now, I was asking that because I know, like, technically you're older than me.
Yeah.
But it seemed like we were, like, in college and stuff around the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the reason why I asked, like, I was like, you graduated in 20 what?
From college?
High school.
From high school. High school, I think 2011, I believe it was. Yeah,
that's what I was asking, because, yeah, I came out 2010.
Yeah.
So we went to school around the same time, and yeah. And so this is all the same stuff that was being pushed pretty much nationwide. So I'm pretty sure when you was in high school, they was pushing, hey, go to college and get you a degree.
Yeah. Well, see, for us, I don't know, honestly, man, which is a you know, a part of my testimony as well, which I thank God for sure. But for me, man, I wasn't really getting pushed college. I was getting pushed. Man, honestly, the thing that was being kind of trained to me was don't go to jail, you know, and make sure you can stay alive type of thing. I was getting that more than anything. The college conversation honestly didn't come up. It was just one teacher, kind of like on, I can't even think of the name of the movie, but it was just one teacher that came out. She told my wife, what was this, like 11th grade or whatever? And she told my wife, like, yo, you can go to college or whatever, right? My wife was like, how can I do that? And she got interested in college, and she started, you know, raising her grades up and stuff, and she got eligible. And she got a bunch of offers to go to school. She chose to go to Mississippi State. And I'm like, yo, I'm trying to go to school. I want to go, you know, I want to go with her, you know? So, honestly, the thing that shifted it in my mind, because for me, it was either sports or military, going to the military. That's what my mama was preaching, like, you're going to go to the military, you know, send your money back here and we'll take care of it, all that type of thing. But then once I saw that campus, I saw Mississippi State, you know, for the first time, I was like, yeah, I gotta go here. So, yeah, that it wasn't, for the majority, honestly, in this small town, especially from a racial dynamic perspective, you didn't really see a lot of the black kids being told, like, go to college, go to school. You know, they was more so talking to them about trades and, you know, we had this thing called VoTech where you go and you learn.
Yeah, everybody had VoTech.
Yeah, you go and you learn how to weld and stuff. But yeah, the college conversation, that wasn't really pushed on us a whole lot outside of just that one teacher and that one instance, which I'm so thankful for, because, yeah, man, looking back, if I had not gone to school, I'm like, I don't know what I would have been doing, where I would have been, you know, so.
Yeah. I know for us, it was a little bit different. A lot of us, for my years and then, like, years after that, went to school, because at home, the hometown wasn't nothing really to do outside of being a cop or a fireman.
Right.
And then you had to go to school to be a nurse.
Right.
Or you be a teacher. It wasn't a lot of opportunities. All the kind of manufacturing jobs had left. GM had already left.
Yeah.
You didn't really have a lot of options. So that's why we said, okay, we got to do something to make some bread.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Let's get into Mississippi State.
Yeah.
And then I was on your LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I saw that you pretty much did information systems for your major.
Yeah. Yeah. So I did, at the time, this was a new major at State. It was ITS, Information Technology Systems. I started out, funny enough, so when I got accepted in Mississippi State, they asked me, you know, you do like the pre-intake meeting with your
advisor.
Yeah, your advisor. And at the time, I had a woman, and she's like, "What you want to do?" And I talked it through, and I told her like, "Computer engineering sounds good, right?" So I started out in pre-engineering. Man, got my second semester of the first year kind of run down of the class I was gonna have to take. I was trash at math. I'm like, this is computational science, differential equations, all that stuff. I'm like, bro, I can't do this. So to move into, which is your second semester, your first year is honestly where you start in pre-engineering. To get into that, to be accepted into that, you gotta graduate your first semester. I think it was like a 3.5 or whatever. And I'm fresh out of high school. I'm clowning. I didn't do what I needed to do, so I missed that. Switched to computer science, same thing, honestly, with the math again. And that's how I landed on IT. Because she was like, yo, at that point, I got a different advisor. He was like, yo, you went from computer engineering to computer science. What is it that you want to do? Like, you want to do software? You want to do hardware? I'm like, honestly, bro, I just want to, you know, fix computers and learn about them and, you know, have an opportunity to play around. And, like, I enjoy helping people. He's like, there's IT. So, like, looking at IT, so... Yeah, Ryan Colvin. I'm going to shout him out too. Ryan, appreciate that. He was the one who was like, yeah, check out IT. And I went over there and we started having like hands-on classes and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, this is what I want to do right here. So ended up finishing it out.
Yeah. I think it's funny how everybody get into school trying to do something else.
Yeah.
And do that. Like for me, I thought I was going to be an architect.
Yeah. Yeah.
But honestly, I didn't even know like, hey, I could be an architect on the IT side if I wanted to too.
Yeah, for sure.
All those things, I think I tell everybody, like, access to people who've been to school before is one of those things that we still, I say probably, like, more so in the South or just different areas,
yeah,
have issues with.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of us going into college have issues because you don't have anybody you can ask questions to. Right. You don't really have a real mentor.
Right.
So you kind of just go in there. I seen one of your more popular videos on TikTok. It's Green.
Yeah.
We in college Green.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, for me, that was, it was the same thing, just trying to figure everything out. Like, I figured, oh, I want to work from home, college. Yeah. And there was this little chart that showed what different majors made. I was like, okay. Yeah. I mean, at that time, it's same. 20. For me, it's still 20. It's 2011 at the time when I get into computer information systems. And I was like, oh, that's a lot of money to me.
Yeah.
Like, my parents, they make a lot of money. So, I was like, that's more than they make combined. Let me do this.
Yeah. Yeah, mine for me, man, with computer engineering, honestly, it's interesting you said, you know, you don't really have the people to kind of look at. The point of emphasis for me for computer engineering was there was a student that came back, I think, from Ole Miss that came and, like, talked. He was like, yo, I do computer engineering, and I want to go. I think he was going to end up trying to work at, like, NASA or something like that. And I'm like, this sounds good right here, you know? But then once I got an understanding of computer engineering, of course, during my time in school, two things influenced that. I was jailbreaking iPhones. It was a small town. I was jailbreaking and, like, fixing hardware and stuff. And then it kind of, you know, attached to what that student was talking about. I'm like, this is hardware. He talking about hardware, you know. I had got in touch with, at the time, it was called Throwback. At the time, the jailbreaking platform was called Xiphone. And I got in touch with the developer, and he gave me, like, access to the source code to, like, change some stuff out. So I added, like, you know, the text boxes that pop up now on iOS 18 or before. I think they started on iOS 16, actually. I was able to, like, create those so they pop up. It kept crashing the phone. I figured out how to fix, you know, the crash so it wouldn't crash. So I'm like, this is what I want to, you know, do for a living. And then also attached to that, too, is, man, feelings of, honestly, transparently speaking, like, some points of insecurity where you like, yo, as a kid, I really want to do something that matters. And that makes me feel, you know, good about myself.
Right.
And when you put your name, which is what I tell a lot of students to do, put your name next to the actual job, you know, Bryson Ross, computer engineer. It's like, all right, they got a little ring to it. But, you know, the reality is once you get into that, you know, what you got to go through to come out with that degree, it's like, bro, this is a lot. And I don't feel adequately prepared in any way, you know, to go through this. So. Yeah, I'm with you on that for sure. Yeah,
and a lot of those teachers couldn't teach.
Yeah,
they knew the stuff, but they couldn't teach it.
Yeah,
at least to everybody or every learning style.
Yeah, yep. And one thing that I think stood out to me too a lot in high school was those the gifted classes, right? Where you would see a different way of teaching. Honestly, for me, I was a trouble student, right? I graduated high school with like a 1.0, man. I barely got out, like a 1.3. literally a miracle case. Got out. I found out I was graduating because I had that state test that I hadn't passed, that math state test. I passed the math state test the week of graduation, and they rushed and, like, got me the results back because I locked in after my wife was like, yo, I'm going to college. I'm like, I want to go too, you know. Locked in, passed that. They told me the day of graduation, like, my folks bought the robe and everything. I ain't had none of the garnish and nothing because they're like, we ain't spending all that money if you ain't, you know, going through. And, yeah, they told me. It was the day before graduation, actually. It's like, yeah, you made it. I'm like, all right, cool. But the week before that, I had found out I got into Mississippi State, right? And I'm like, bro, like, I gotta, you know, make it out of high school at this point. But, yeah, again, just the way that they kind of talked to us and taught us was more so, it kind of felt like a chick, you know, like a box chick type of thing versus, like, I want to really, you know, impart some knowledge into you and prepare you for the next level. So it's really, in a lot of ways, it's really on you, you know, once you get there to figure that thing out. And mentors, you know, are few and far between, especially for us.
Yeah, and then I was reading something a while back, and it was saying one of the main issues that I see the black students struggle, why they struggle so much as students, is because they try to do everything individually.
Yeah.
And they're saying how, like, the Asians or the white kids, they will go study together.
Yeah.
It's like they should study together, and they'll get farther along versus trying to study by themselves.
Yeah.
And I was like, I actually think that's, like, very smart. Like,
yeah,
study with amongst each other. Everybody may know something different.
Yeah.
And y'all could do much better in the classes.
Yeah, they got, me and my wife was talking about that, actually. You was talking about, like, Plano and Aries, right? I think we were riding through, we went to get some food in Frisco, and we rode past, like a code ninja or something like that, mm-hmm. and the kids were lined up outside. It was, like, one black kid. And I'm like, bro, these kids are, not only that, but let me finish this point. I'm like, these kids, we stopped, and I'm looking at them, I'm like, look at these kids. Like, it was one black kid, he was in the back, he was with his dad. Dad super tall was what made me notice in the first. I'm like, dude, like, in the league or something, he was like 7 feet tall. But the rest of the kids were like Asian and Indian kids, right? And while they were standing in line, they had, like, their books out and they was all hooded up. And I'm like, bro, they literally, like, going into a coding class, they kids, they look like they were at least like 9, 10, 11. And, like, a whole cohort came out as they were preparing to go in. So they was waiting on the class to come out. It was all Asian and Indian kids. And, like, again, one, it was a black girl that came out with her mom. And it was, like, one, you know, even still in that group. And then they went in. I'm like, bro, we don't really have, you know, there are some, like, in spaces like Atlanta where you see, you know, those things. But, like, it's not the norm.
Yeah. Well, I think, too, I think it's not too fair to, like, do Frisco because, like, population of it is not as many black people.
Right.
In Frisco. That's more of, you're going to see a lot of Indians in Frisco.
Yeah.
White people, probably like some Asians.
Yeah.
I was surprised when I moved to where I stayed in the area, Prosper Aubrey area, it's a lot more black people up there.
Yeah.
So, but you probably see more of the black people in the DeSoto's, Mansfield, Duncanville, Grand Prairie area.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to maybe somebody that's from that area, if they got similar stuff over there.
Yeah.
And how they are trying to help them get into those STEM fields.
Yeah, yeah. I think, too, man, I don't know. I feel like we hit a phase, because I got the nonprofit that we started after coming back from California, and it feels like now students are in such a disillusioned state leaving high school where, because so many teachers are, in my opinion, politically compromised in a way, where, you know, they push students in the direction of where they assume the country to be going. For example, right, you'll hear a candidate get up and say, like, I'm getting rid of fracking, I'm bringing back fracking, and I'm, you know, fossils and all of this stuff, and we're going to get back to drilling, right? They're like, oh, this is where the money is going to be, right? So I need to push my students in that direction. Or you hear them say, like, there are a bunch of articles, which I consider to be propaganda in a lot of ways. But there's a bunch of articles that come out now where they're like, yo, the millionaires are no longer in tech. It's in plumbing and, you know, trades. And I'm like, bro, like, if you realistically break that down to a student, which is what I try to do when I go and talk to students, I'm like, okay, you in the bed, you want to do a trade. How long do you think it's going to take you to get to, you know, a livable wage? It ain't got to be six figures. Like, let's, you know, realistically say if you live in Memphis and you want, say, 85, 90 racks, right? And you single, no kids. How long do you think it's going to take you to get to that? And you're like, yo, I'm getting that out the gate. I'm like, you not. Because it is a, you know, you have to create the business. You got to be a business owner. You got to do the work. You got a contract. You got to market. And not only that, in those industries, what people fail to mention is this: those are sometimes more competitive than tech. Because, like, if it's a say for example, like it's a in where I'm from, it's an old construction family, right? I think they call it like the Worsham Brothers or something, right? They've been there for years, like since my granddaddy was young, right? You're not just gonna be able to break out of tech, you know, break out of vocational school and start a construction company and then compete with these folks. Like, you're gonna end up working for them.
Yeah, it's gotta go through your apprentice program. Right. That, like, so, like, funny you said that, like, my dad, blue collar worker, his stepdad had a construction company.
Yeah.
So that's where my dad learned how to, you know, do concrete, finish driveways and foundations and stuff like that. I would tell people if they did want to do trades, look into the trades everybody don't want to do.
Right.
Like, stuff like that, everybody don't want to do concrete because it's hard.
Yeah.
Learn that. Then as you get better, that's when, like, with the inception now, so much AI, you can hire, like, AI employees now.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah.
So doing things of that nature and figuring out how to market your business and word of mouth, like, they stay, like, I moved away from Shreveport 8 years ago, but they stay reaching out and, like, saying, hey, y'all still doing driveways, stuff like that?
Yeah.
Like, my dad's stuff. So I was like, you get word of mouth, learn how to price.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could, but it is a learning curve. Everybody not business savvy. Yeah. Everybody don't need to be a business owner.
Right.
But you're definitely right. And you said something about the nonprofit. The first time me saying this on the show is I recently just started one as well.
Yeah.
More details to come.
Yeah, congrats.
We got some stuff in the works. So if the stuff go off like it's supposed to, by like the second month of 2025, it's going to be up for real.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
Because that's what I want to do too. I really have it focused more so on high school, college, and then eventually I'll probably get to adults.
Yeah.
But they'll probably have to meet a certain like income threshold for like that, at least in the beginning.
Yeah.
Until like we get more established things of that nature. But
yeah.
I definitely want to work directly with colleges. So now I'm going to circle back to my old college to see if the curriculum is the same.
Yeah.
And see how can I work with them on bridging the gap for like some of their kids to either get jobs or something like that. Because 2-3 years ago, I looked at LA Tech's computer information systems.
Yeah. Outdated.
Curriculum. It was the same as I did back in 2010.
Same.
I was just like, okay, are they getting certifications? So I was talking to the head, I forgot what they're called, but the head person of the program who used to be my professor.
Yeah.
And then I never emailed them back. So I'm gonna reach out to them again.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna ask my partners on how I would navigate this and figure out how I could get some funds from the school, but also facilitate these things.
Yeah.
And if I'm able to do that, I think that'd be perfect. Cause that's people just do not have a lot of direction.
Right.
While I'm in school, which is why, like I said, for the 1,000th time, this is why I like WGU, but why I don't like it in the event if you don't have any experience of knowing what you're going to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a checkbox type of degree.
Yeah.
And it gives you so many different certifications. Don't get me wrong.
They watered them down now, too. They got rid of some of them.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's still good that you get one, but at WGU, a lot of times you don't build that network that you possibly would build that going. Honestly, if you got a chance, if it's affordable to you, go to college, go on campus, get away from family and everything. Take that time to do your character development. I think that's imperative for young people.
Yeah.
Especially with these Gen Z kids. They're different. They need to figure out how to live on their own.
Yeah. Honestly, bro, it's kind of like the, I think it was Time they wrote an article about that. It's like the screen generation, you know, where
they don't have to talk to people.
Yeah, they went through this whole sequence of this dude that ended up marrying somebody. And he saw her out, and he knew her, saw her out at an event, looked at her, walked past her, got home, texted her like, I saw you today. It's like, bro, you know, they ended up, you know, connecting later on, but it's kind of that, you know, thought process where it's like, I don't know. I don't know if it's COVID that got rid of that interpersonal aspect of things where people just having a hard time reconnecting.
It's just a fear of rejection.
Yeah, that's true, too. That's true, too. Man, look, listen, I'm used to the rejection. I told my wife that, you know, I'm used to being the ugly dude in the room that, like, walk up to a girl, shoot your shot, and they're like, nah, you like, hey, it is what it is.
Oh, funny that you say that no since you brought that up. This is, since, I don't know, when I'm trying to put this out, like, soon.
Yeah.
What you feel about Travis Hunter and his fiance?
Bro, listen, man. Listen, I think it's, my wife is really good at, you know, I'll say reading people. And from her perspective, you know, she's like, yo, I think she's scared of what's to come. And, you know, it's a lot of other stuff going on that you can't necessarily see unless you have an understanding of, you know, those types of relationships, right? So I get that side of it from, you know, a little, I don't know. I get that side of it from, you know, kind of a woman's perspective or my wife's perspective, right? From my side of things, bro, it looked bad. From the outside looking just straight up in, it looked bad. Like, it looked bad. Especially, too, having, we were talking about mentors, right? Having somebody like a Deion Sanders who went through that, you know, similar situation with his relationship, and it was very public, and even though he was able to push through it and still, you know, succeed, I don't know, man. I genuinely like pray for that, man. I'm like, bro, let me pray for this, man, for it. Cause like, you know, I understand being in love, understand being, you know, solid, but you know, Bow Wow gave some pretty good advice.
I ain't listened to it.
Yeah.
I would just say like most of the people who older who've been, not even, you got athletes that's been through it. Shannon Sharpe gave him advice, and everybody else. Like, I don't even know how old Travis Hunter is. He might be, what, 21?
I think he has 20s.
20? 20s. Early 21?
20s. Yeah.
He's like around age, one of my baby brothers. He's 20.
Yeah.
And this is when you learn, like, hey, the kids just got to figure out themselves. Like, so much stuff that I told him when he was like his freshman year at Tech, I'm like, yo, this, when it comes to these women, this and this. I used the, I think, I don't know if Future said this or not, but I was like, if you treat them like a superstar, they're going to treat you like a fan.
Yeah.
And I tell him that, and then he was like, he'll come back later and say, man, you was right.
Yeah.
I have a younger cousin. I would tell him the same thing. Me and him are close to the next. I'm like 2-3 years older than him. And then years later, like two years ago in Austin, we were sitting down talking. He was like, man, we get this wisdom and knowledge from, said, life, messing up.
Yeah.
And that's like, all I want y'all to do is do better to be.
Yeah.
So that's literally what I'm telling you, like, just in a concerning way, like, what, just from what I know.
Yeah.
And from what I glean from Travis, what I honestly think it is this is probably the first person that really liked him, or he thinks really likes him.
Yeah.
And because he said they've been here 5 years.
Yeah.
And then you go to, like, I think before he had his teeth fixed and all this other stuff, outside of his athletic ability and stuff like that, he probably wasn't getting a lot of looks.
Like, yeah.
So I know for a fact that's happened, because it's only a subset of dudes that I played ball with or whatever that was getting women. Yeah. Everybody else wasn't. You know, a lot of times, hey, if you don't look the best, as long as you're super talented or something like that. No, I've always had this joke. Was like, in order to be cold in sports, you have to be ugly.
Yeah.
I always had this joke about it, because, you know, you rarely see like a Odell or some other people, like an attractive person be very, very good.
Good at sports.
To where, like, he could still be fine without this because, you know what I'm saying? So,
man, go model something.
Right. So you rarely see that. So I think it looks like that's what he was going to do. But hopefully, you know, I hope people, like, they're trying to wish the bad. I really, like, I'm not too into it to where, like, everybody else is.
Yeah.
I just see the little headlines about, like, her doing this and that. But, like, I think, one, she's going to do media training. Two, he is, too. I'm like, hey, y'all ain't got to respond to everything.
Yeah, man. I think, so going back to what you said, you know, you treat him like a superstar, they treat you like a fan. I'm a big advocate of, as a result of, you know, man, I got married at, what, 23? Mm-hmm. 24, my wife was 22 at the time. We got married super young. But I'm a big advocate of, you know, relational reciprocity.
I know you're going to go ahead.
So in some instances, and that's where, man, discernment comes into play. You know, in some instances in relationships, you know, you can kind of read the room of what folks call the vibes, right? Where it's like, all right, I'm being respectful. I'm doing everything, saying everything that I should. You know, I ain't talking to other women. This is my priority one, right? And if you don't see, would be my advice, if you don't see the reciprocity in that regard, then it's like, okay, then you need to, like, seek external counsel. Like, all right, this feel a little off.
Bring it
you
up. You know, a lot of people will not say nothing to the person. They don't communicate.
It's hard to have those, even now, bro, for me even, it's hard to have, you know, hard, even at work. Work honestly trained me for that. When I was, when I became a manager at, at Netflix, right, the thing for me that was the hardest was being okay with people not liking me. And then when you trace those things back, it's like, okay, this has been something, you know, since a kid. Like, hey, I want people to be all right with me. I want people to, you know, because I'm very energetic and boisterous. You know, you come into the room, I'm still, to this day, the person that'll bring the energy to the room. But then I feel like with wisdom now, I understand that there's a time and a place, right? Because everybody don't want you busting in at, I was doing it every morning at Netflix, like busting in at 8 a.m. like, yo, you know, bringing the energy up.
They be like, bro, I just woke up.
I was
up partying last night.
I don't want to hear that. Yeah, but, you know, you still got to maintain you, and you can't, you know, allow a relationship or any situation to change you. But work taught me in a lot of ways, you know, one, that it's okay to have those hard conversations because they're necessary. And you can, you know, apply that, or I have at least applied that in my personal relationships as well, where, I don't know, in the black family, at least in mine, right, it's like, yo, you know, talking back, it's talking back. You know, you try to address something, or you bring something up that your folks done left. Like, hold on, bro. Actually, you know, what you said to me last night hurt my feelings a little bit. Can we talk about that? That's a, hold on. Yeah, we can talk about it. Let me get this belt to help you talk about it, you know. I think, you know, doing away with that train of thought and being able to present or be in a relationship to be forthcoming and say, like, yo, you was, you know, you putting a little bit too much out there. My wife talked a lot about, we was actually comparing last night. We were talking about Savannah and LeBron. And she was like, I didn't really get, you know, that vibe from, my wife mentioned, she's like, I didn't really get that vibe from Savannah early on, where she was like, I'm here to watch LeBron. She was like, Savannah gave the vibe of like, I'm here to have fun and LeBron playing basketball, right? But I told her, I think that came as a result, kind of similar to her and my relationship, right? Came as a result of them being together since high school. Like, she like, you know, Bron had that too, where he had the fro and, you know, man was looking scrunchy and, you know, had crusty on his lips and everything. But like, she was there already, you know. So I think in a lot of instances, you know, you just kind of got to pick up on the vibes and not just be oblivious. And it, from the outside looking in, it feels like, you know, he is kind of a little bit oblivious to some of the things that are very transparent in his face right now. But I pray they figure it out for sure.
For sure. And I think more so his more concerning thing is ball.
Yeah. Which is, he care more about that than anything.
And I just like, you just got to do the media training, because like my cousin, granted he wasn't Travis Hunter, but yeah, her husband, he was, he went to the league.
Yeah.
So like, granted, she ain't even that type. She ain't the jealous type,
yeah,
that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, man, listen.
It comes with the territory.
Once she opened her mouth, she let them start scrutinizing everything she do and say.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know if it was her real IG account, but it was like, look what she put on her Anthony
Edwards picture. Nah, it wasn't. Yeah, my wife told me it wasn't real.
I know it wasn't.
Did she do that? Yeah.
I know it wasn't. But the fact that somebody now said, oh, I control, I can make a fake account of her and do all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm saying. That's why sometimes it's best just like, in the words of the boy, a wise man once said nothing at all.
Yeah. Absolutely, bro. Listen, so it's so much I've learned it, especially as a utility in corporate America. Silence is louder and more, you know, indicative of, I don't know, honestly, there's power in the ambiguity is what I would say. You ain't got to respond to everything. Everybody does not deserve an exact response from you in the moment. Like, and I think, too, that, which we'll get into, I'm sure, but I think, too, you know, in the element of being a young professional in corporate America, that's the thing that I try to articulate to specifically black people, is that, yo, you don't owe everybody a response. You don't owe everybody an explanation. Like, my wife was really big on saying something to me about that early on. Like, yo, you be trying to explain yourself, and, like, folks be pulling stuff from the explanation, and then they know, like, if I want to trip him up, you know, all I got to do is bring something up and he going to go overboard and trying to explain. Right now, I will, you know, take a step back. It's kind of like a 3-part process, right? Take a step back, listen first, take a step back, and then assess before I respond. And in some instances too, man, especially in corporate, you know, if it's like a high priority situation or something that can, like, an interpersonal situation that can turn into like an HR thing or something, it's best to put that on ice for the day. Like, go sleep on your response, think through your response, whatever it's going to be, you know. And that's been really, you know, instrumental in me being successful. But going back to what you were saying, though, it goes back to mentors. You said she need media training. I think it's going to be a slippery slope, because I think he either going to go first or sixth. He's going to go in the first round for sure.
Yeah, probably top 5 picks.
Yeah, top 5 picks. Everybody's saying that Shador is going to go first, which I don't know. You know,
I think he would.
Yeah.
But I hope he don't go to the Giants.
I mean, I think, I don't know. The thing that I hope is, one, and we talking about sports now, one, I hope he does go first. But I hope he has an opportunity to – I hope he goes to a team that's in development. Because if he did go to the Giants and, you know
– But you know what? Giants been in disarray, but him having Malik Nabers wouldn't be too bad.
It wouldn't be. And, two, I feel like that's a situation where that would open the door for his dad. Because I don't feel like his dad really want to stay in college like that unless he gets,
I think,
like,
he do.
Yeah. I think he want to stay?
I think he want to stay because he knows around the same thing – that Nick Saban knows. It's like, once I
get to the training aspect, do you?
When I get to the NFL, they grown men, they already who they is.
Yeah.
Like, so I think right now, yeah, because I mean, I think at any given time, if he wants to go coach, he could do like Pete Carroll and go to NFL if he wants to. But I think right now, he's into like trying to mold some of these guys. They already get some good recruits. So I don't see him foregoing that, you know.
Yeah.
It had to be super lucrative. Or it had to be a way where some type of way Shadur get to the Cowboys in like year five or something and he can go coach at the Cowboys.
Yeah, that'd be fine. I think they got a house out there too. But to the mental point, I think you said the media training. I think just getting around other folks that have other wives that have kind of gone through it, that can like sit her to the side and say like, yo,
And they probably have been doing it, but you know, you just cannot tell young people.
That's what they're pride and ego, they come into play.
Because they got so much, like, that's probably the pro and the con. Back then, everybody couldn't just record something and get online and go viral.
Yeah, that's true.
10, 15 years ago. Now you can. So everybody got a voice. Which is one of the things I kind of hate about social media. Like, everybody got a voice. Everybody feel like they're important.
Take the podcast mic away, right?
Look, hey, what they say on TikTok, put the fries in the bag.
Man, listen, that's crazy. Somebody told me that. Somebody said that to me, and even going back to what you said, like, the old me would have rambled out of my credentials and be like, I did this, I did that, bro. Like, the me now, I'm like, bro, that's funny. I'm just going to move. I put a like on it and just kept on going because I was in the comments on a cybersecurity post, and I was commenting, like, the dude was, like, the best cert bar none to get is the, dang, what was it? I think it was CISSP. He was like, your first search you should ever get in cybersecurity, CISSP.
Is that light-skinned dude?
I don't know. I can't remember who it was. It was like a random post that I scrolled by, and I saw it, and he was like, all right. He was sitting in a car, he was like, the number one search you should get as a cybersecurity professional before you get anything else is the CISSP. And I commented a long thing, and I'm like, bro, you need fundamental knowledge to get to the CISSP.
I wonder if that's the Tech by Trail, dude.
I don't know. I had to find it.
Because we were supposed to each have an intro call one time.
Yeah.
Cause I stitched that on my page one time, and I was like, "This is somebody who probably not in the field, just telling you something."
Yeah.
Cause they Google certifications to get cybersecurity. I was like, "It don't work like that. Somebody got to endorse you to get CISSP."
Yeah, you gotta. Yeah,
go get it. No.
Yeah, it's similar. Man, the thing that bothers me most about, like, you know, the cert culture, which again I'm sure we'll talk about, but I think for me working at Georgia Tech, right, and being able to, I was working at the help desk, went from tier one to tier two. And in tier one, I saw so many people that had these credentials, but then not just seeing those credentials, being able to see what they were doing on a day-to-day basis, and then you go and see the degree that they got behind it, and then you go and see the experience that they got. It's like, oh, you didn't just go and grab, you know, the CISSP. You worked your way up to this, and then the director, you know, was the person that also has their CISSP that, you know, went through the process with you on that. And I think that's just knowledge that I try to share with people. So that's what I put in the comments, like, yo, the one thing, and I mentioned Simone, because the person that he stitched, it was a video of a dude crying. He was like, I just got fired. I was trying to get into tech, and my manager came in and caught me, you know, doing some tech work on the work hours, and she was like, yo, you out. And now I'm not done with my transition yet. And he was like, the thing that you shouldn't have been, he was focused on Security Plus. And he was like, the thing, where you messed up at, first of all, is getting your Security Plus. Well, he said, getting your Security Plus, right, was where he messed up. He was like, the only search you need to be worried about is cybersecurity professional, CSSP. And I commented, like, bro, you on the right track. And I reached out to the dude. We ended up talking.
Bro, you gotta find that video for me.
Yeah, I'm going to find it. I think I saved it in my slew of TikToks. But I ended up reaching out to the dude, and I commented on there or whatever, and he liked it. He didn't respond, but he liked it. And once he liked it, I just reached out via DM, like, hey, bro, if you want to talk, you know, we can schedule a call or whatever. We ended up talking just last week, actually. And now he changed his mind. He said now he wanted to do like some type of engineering or computer engineering type of thing. Because now he got another job. He's working in finance now. I'm doing like a finance thing now. And he's like, I want to stay in this range. I'm like, bro, if you live in where you live now, which is on the East Coast close to New York, and I'm like, finance, I know folks that work in finance, and you have gathered an understanding. I think he made like a copy of the Bloomberg portal on his own. I'm like, bro, that's impressive. Like, if you figured that out. And these are correct. He did it for crypto, where it's like a ticker and all of that. And he's like, bro, I got this on my phone. I added this to my watch. I'm like, bro, if you can do that, there are literal firms in New York right now. He's like, I move wherever. I'm like, you need to go to New York and, you know, kind of grind. He come from a little bit of money, too. So I'm like, take that money that you paying on this rent, find your roommate. I think he said he paying like $2,100 a month for his spot. And his parents paying it. And he like, I told him, bro, if you can take that $2,100 or even split that in half, find you a roommate in New York, try to like set you like a 6-month time frame of being in New York, and then go to these networking. New York got so many networking events. Go to these networking events for like, you know, tech and finance, and try to find you a quick internship. Do you like a 3-month internship somewhere in there, that network, you know, shout out to Wolf of Wall Street, somewhere in there, somebody in that network or those networking events will be like, yo, what do you do? And your door is open at that point. And if you can create a ticker that, you know, mimics the Bloomberg tickers or whatever the case may be, bro, you in there. So I think that's a strategy you're going to take. But what I said to him initially was, you doing the right thing. And looking into the Security Plus, because that's a good foundational cert. And I mentioned Simone to him as well, of like, yo, if you're looking into the government, like, this is a very, you know, simplistic or simplified process of getting into that industry, which is, you know, projects, Security Plus, job search strategy, similar to what you said earlier, right? Where the government is going, because the government is so siloed in technical places, they're going to teach you a lot of this stuff, right? As long as you got the credentials, they're going to teach you a lot of this stuff. So, but yeah, I think he's on a good track now. But yeah, man, folks on social media, they be all over with it.
Yeah, they be bugging. Yeah. But to get into something that you brought up, that you mentioned it before I did. So you started doing IT support at Mississippi State.
Yeah.
Now, was that for the whole college, or was that for a specific college of, like for me, I did IT for the College of Business for almost 2 years.
Yeah.
What about you?
So I was a student worker at Mississippi State, and I was working for the ITS department, which covered the whole campus. Started out in that role. Dang, who was I working on? It was Entomology was the first building. Then I got hooked up with one of my mentors, Dr. Gatewood, shout out to him. Got hooked up with one of my mentors, and he had sports. So he gave me, like, once he, you know, viewed me as a trusted resource, he gave me, like, half of his department to go and do support for. So it was, like, football, softball. I didn't have baseball. He kept baseball. Who else did I have? I think I had women's basketball. And then I did some stuff for men's basketball. But in that, you know, you still did stuff for the president's office as well. But in that, I feel like that's really where I learned the most, which it sucks now, which we can talk about. But it sucks now because the help desk is essentially, I feel bad sometimes, unless it's in specific situations of suggesting the help desk to folks. Because it's like, bro, help desk ain't paying, you know, even what it used to is paying less than it used to in the broad aspect of things. But yeah, doing that, that was honestly where I learned 90% of everything that was my foundation, where I learned more or less everything, and how to communicate with people was the biggest thing in there, right? But yeah, to answer your question, I had, sports, mostly sports in that first job.
Cool. And so I know you did that for a while.
Yeah.
And, well, let's do this, because I got IT people that watch this, help desk people that watch this.
Yeah.
When you say, and I know it's been a while since you did IT support.
Yeah.
But when you say when you learn some stuff, what type of stuff outside of communication, we'll say, outside of soft skills, what type of technical skills did you learn?
Yeah, so first part of the help desk, right, at Mississippi State, the technical things that I learned were really focused on the broad organizational tasks, right? So, for example, if a ticket came through, that's where I gathered an understanding of ITSM. That's where I learned about service level agreements, internal, external service level agreements. So we had an internal service level agreement around, hey, you know, see something, grab something was kind of the motto, right? You see a ticket come through, you grab it. You attach your name to it, and the SLA starts, which was a response time SLA of initial response, not a completion, was, you know, I think like 10 minutes in that. And that was we had like a call center of student workers. But then we kind of shortened that as well. So I get an understanding as to how to understand metrics, service level agreements. Within that, once you got to tier two of that, I get an understanding of KPI, key performance indicators. Like, all right, these are the things, which I appreciate my manager at the time for doing. He laid out, like, these are the things that would say to me from a box check perspective that you're ready for the next level, for me to give you a department on your own, right? So it helped me gather an understanding of that. One of the biggest things for me, honestly, on the technical side of things, and I know folks hate printers, but printers, those enterprise.
What you talking about, the Ricohs?
Yeah, them old school, you know, them bad scan Ricohs. Bro, when I mastered, let me tell you, that learning about printers early on in my career, enterprise printers, and from a technical side of things, and the hard drives and all that stuff inside of them, that really opened the door for me in terms of being able, once I got to Georgia Tech especially, but being able to kind of jump from department to department. But from a foundational perspective, just figuring out how an org works as opposed to, like, you know, going out and just grabbing computers and unplugging them and replugging them type of thing. So, yeah, those are some of the things I learned early on.
Yeah, I know for me, I can't even remember far back. I know it wasn't. We was doing stuff like, they had like these smart podiums.
Yeah.
They may have some going on with the computer fixing it or whatever. Yeah. Like, cause so the other thing that I've mentioned before is, so what also got me interested even more in IT was over the College of Business whole IT department was a black man. His name is Mr. Eddie.
Nice.
He came, as a matter of fact, I think he's from Chicago. Yeah. He had a lot of experience. Like, he was like, he got experience in that stuff that they don't even do no more, like Novell and all that stuff.
Man, I remember Novell.
Like, we used to use Dell Case Client for our ticketing process.
Nice.
And that's who got me like interested. He like a wealth of knowledge. And I plan to like go back to school and probably get him on there.
Yeah.
Cause that was like pretty cool. Cause that was my first time seeing anybody look like me that knows how to do this stuff that's making great money doing it.
Yeah.
You had a big family out there in Ruston too.
Yeah.
And all his kids would come up into our area where we worked at and stuff. Just
chill. Yeah. That's dope.
He was solid too.
Yeah.
So shout out to him for that. So you leave Mississippi State.
Yeah.
And then you start doing IT support at Georgia Tech.
It wasn't
Georgia UGA. Tech.
I was at UGA for like a year.
You went from IT support to IT engineer.
Yeah, yeah. I went from IT support to IT engineer at UGA.
So you moved to Georgia at this time?
Yeah, that's when we got to Georgia. My wife got into grad school at UGA, so I got a job at UGA as well.
I was like, you was doing it smart then, because you know how it does. Okay, let me ask you this. Since she was your spouse at that time, did she get like any discount on school?
She got, bro, so we both got our master's degrees for free. She got hers for free through, she was doing an assistantship at UGA. Literally, and this is the part that folks don't hear about a lot, you know, when folks are like, yo, look at my Range Rover, bro, I'm in tech. You know, when my first job, real job in tech, bro, I was making, on paper, $30,000. After them taxes, I was bringing home, man, like $1,200 a month. We was at a point where I would, it was a Dairy Queen on the way home, Dixie Queen, whatever it was, on the way home or whatever, coming back from UGA. And if my wife wasn't at home yet, I would like try to sneak, they had like the 5 for $5 thing. And I'd try to sneak like some chicken tenders or whatever, like, let me get 3 instead of the 5, right? And it still come out to like $5.49. And I get to the house and she look at the bank account like, bro, what you spend $5 on? So I was in tech. I was working, you know, I had a reputable job, I had a pension and all that, but like we were still like, you know, struggling. She was making more than me as an assistant, doing her assistantship. But yeah, to answer your question, yeah, she got her degree for free at UGA. I was working there at the time and it wasn't sustainable, you know, financially. So when she finished that, we was out to Atlanta. And from there, man, my first dream job was Georgia Tech, where I'm like, yo, this is the spot where, you know, engineers go. Again, in my mind, I'm like, bro, I didn't get to finish computer engineering. I didn't get to finish computer science, but I can work here. You know, I can be amongst the elites, right? And man, God came through big time on that, because I was literally stunned. In between that, when my wife finished grad school, right, she was working at like, I think she was working at like a Dell XMC call center, which was hilarious to me as a person in tech, because she didn't know nothing about tech. And she read me her script one time and like she said she had to call people and it was like offering to people to buy like business servers. And she's like, I'll be praying they hang up on me. So I couldn't have to do this. And she was at work or whatever. And I did the Georgia Tech interview, live UGA. One day did the Georgia Tech interview. Man, I had on a full blown suit, 2-piece.
Hey, listen, these people know who rock the thing.
Yeah,
wearing suits to an interview used to be a thing.
It used to be a thing for real. Now, bro, I had a dude came in for an interview like a month ago. Bro, I had a hoodie on, some shorts. I'm like, come on. He was knowledgeable. I'm gonna give it to him, bro. The role was around. you probably know what I'm talking about too. The role was around. Not dashboard databases. And that database knowledge, for those of you interested in that, database knowledge is very hard to come by. Today, we got had a bunch of old databases that essentially nobody knew anything about. A lot of those things, too, in terms of the point of sale system, but an old school thing, because we needed to convert it into our new CRM. A lot of this stuff was in COBOL, right? Dude my age, he like, my daddy taught me COBOL. He worked at Dillard's back in the day, so I know it. So it worked out, right? But yeah, he came in with a hoodie and some shorts, and I'm like, bro, you got the job, bro. But like back in the day, bro,
it's a technicality because like ain't nobody else that know it.
Yeah, he knew it too. When we was on the phone interview, man had a toothpick in his mouth or whatever. He's like, yeah, what y'all need? I'm like, bro, he already know he got us, so ain't really much that can be done. You know. But yeah, I had on a, man, two-piece suit. I still got this suit hanging up too. Two-piece suit, had the tie, had my shoes shined up, went in there like, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir, you know. And they called me and told me I got the job for Georgia Tech. And I sat stunned for a minute. I called my wife. I'm like, y'all got a job at Georgia Tech. And I think that role starting out was like 56, like 56.5. And at the time, that's my money I ever seen. I'm like, boy, we, you know, we good now. We moving to the A. And from that moment on, my wife was like, she just went to, because, you know, you have metered breaks or whatever. You get like 5-minute breaks every hour or so. Mm-hmm. She said she just used the rest of her break time that day because, like, she's like, yo, I'm out. We going to go to Atlanta. So that's when we got to Atlanta. I was working at Georgia. Georgia Tech's College of Computing. And that's where it really just, like, my mind was blown, some of the things that I saw. That's where I really learned a lot of, like, niche, deeply technical stuff that, like, carried me along the way, that really opened up my mind. I'm like, all right, I want to take this thing the whole way at this point. So, yeah.
Yeah. And was there any other – all right, so was there any other technical skills or platforms you got access to at Georgia Tech versus, man, Mississippi State?
Yeah. So Mississippi State was very, like, bare bones. I had access to the ticketing system. And that was essentially a ticketing system. And I had access to, I was getting a bunch of hoodies and stuff. You know, it was cool. Getting stuff signed, as I said. I got stuff signed by Dak. But then in between that, you know, skipping over UGA, getting to Georgia Tech, I got access to the patch panel for the college. I got access to, we had high-performance computing clusters, right? First time I ever heard of HPCC, right? I got access to that. I got access to, or I was able to gather an understanding of packet tracing. We were getting, one of the biggest things that really opened my mind up that made me, you know, interested more from just like the support perspective of things. We had a lab, it was a Linux lab that the guy had, that had quit before me, set up, and there were, non-authorized ports in the lab. Right. So they just went in, essentially what they had like bots or whatever. That was like, this is pre AI, real true AI implementation as to where we see it now. No ChatGPT. They had bots that would pick up cans and it would like crush the cans. It was a recycle bot. And they just had it in the wall, jacked into a port, and they just needed it to have internet access. It wasn't functioning as like an IoT device where somebody could go in and exploit and sit on that.
That's what I immediately thought of.
Yeah, yeah. They weren't functioning like that. It was just like a basic network card on the back of a, you know, pre-built robot. So they moved all those things out, moved a Linux lab in there. And there was some Microsoft engineers, Microsoft researchers that were doing their PhDs in there, right? And went in there, and almost every port in there was on. It was literally somebody sitting on. You could literally see, like, the duplicate addresses sitting on the ports and monitoring their activity. I'm like, yo, these are Microsoft researchers, for one, that are shouldn't have been. I still remember it was Ubuntu 16.4. And they wanted to stay on 16.4 because they're like, we created our own custom drivers and we can stay on this and, like, we can, you know, connect to any printer in the college and all of this stuff. And these are all the things that we made, right? But I'm like, yo, somebody is literally watching you all work, like, in real time, like, as you are uploading your work. People are probably capturing this, right? So I worked with our, it was our security team. They came in, they redid all the ports. And in that, there was like a patch panel dashboard that they gave me access to where you could go in and like monitor and see, you know, who was logged in, what was their machine IP, how long had they been there, those types of things. So once I saw that, I'm like, bro, I ain't never seen nothing like this before. You could turn somebody's port off, turn it back on. We went to got to an instance where I suggested, because it was still out of hand because everybody was using Linux in the labs, right? Once they started using Kali, I'm like, okay, now we should move to like a port leasing method, right? Where you create a ticket, you tell us you're going to be in the office, you tell us where your seat is, you tell us what port you want to use, and we'll turn that port on for an hour, 2 hours for you to do work. And once that lease is up, then we turn that off, right? And that was really the only way at the time to keep those secure. So having access to those things really opened up my mind to, you know, greater possibilities of like, okay, it's some deeply technical stuff and deeply technical people around here that I can learn from for sure.
Bet. So if memory serves me correctly, after you did, I want to say like close to like 2 years at Georgia Tech,
yeah,
right?
I was there, almost 4 years. Yeah,
4 years.
4 years. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So after you did that, that's when you got your first IT manager gig, right?
Yeah, I got that IT manager gig at, it's the spot next to Atlanta Tech Village. Folks in Atlanta know. I don't even know if Atlanta Tech Village is there, but it's where Calendly came up and all of that. Got a gig with a startup. So the thing I want to mention, too, as a bridge, right, from Georgia Tech. As a result of working there, there was this guy who was a researcher, and he had came back. He was doing like a sabbatical, so he was a professor. He was working in Silicon Valley. Two guys, they were both working in Silicon Valley, and they were kind of going back and forth. And I went in to help him set up his lab. This is the guy that created the Google Glass, and we were setting up like this broad green screen that was connected to the network, right? And as we were talking, he jumped on the phone with somebody, might have been from like Palo Alto Networks or something, and he was trying to do like a have his research data go from live, go when he was in the lab, his research lab, go directly from the lab to Silicon Valley, so his researchers there could like monitor. And he wanted it beyond just like them watching on the camera. He wanted them to actually be able to see the sequence of, you know, when they're moving the glass and stuff. So I just asked him, like, what is this, you know, the utility of this, right? And he started talking about the investors and, like, you know, what they would want to see and how it would, you know, be interesting to advance it beyond. So his thought at the time, you know, the Google Glass was just the thing in front of your eye. His thought was what we see now with Meta, right? Which is like, you know, this should be inside of the actual device and we're working towards that. And as he talked, I'm like, bruh, I have thought about Silicon Valley. And I, you know, in my mind, it's like a place where, like this mystical place, right? Where, you know, the super smart tech folks go and this where all the, you know, bleeding edge technology is. But that's really where my thirst for wanting to, you know, be elite in this tech thing. Like, all right, I got to figure out how to get to Silicon Valley. So in that, I was very intentional while still at Georgia Tech. You talked about the platforms in figuring out what platforms did what, how to use these things, and what would, you know, what information I would need to be able to make it to Silicon Valley. So in colleges, right, a lot of that, a lot of those systems that they have are very, like, ancestral, old, you know, on-prem, not going to change. I figured out, hey, I need to gather an understanding of cloud and SaaS app, you know, SaaS-based. Applications, right? So that's when I went to the startup, got their first gig as their IT manager, more or less. They just kind of, yo, we a Google shop. We need you to implement Okta. They say we need some single sign-on and identity and access management. We got no control over our tickets. Everything coming through Slack right now. So it honestly was just a playground for me to get in there and just mess around. And I did that for a good year where I took that thing from, man, I just turned it. I had an unlimited budget at the time when I came in. It's like, whatever you need, we'll pay for it. So put together a roadmap. That was my first time doing a roadmap. Got the roadmap approved through finance. Had an opportunity to implement Okta and work with third-party vendors. I gathered an understanding of that. So that was a check. The SaaS apps, I was able to modernize the tech stack to a point as to where when I first came in, I was having a one-to-one answer out of tickets, and then I was able to have them flow through an intake support process where there was an automated response to tickets come in, gathering an understanding of that. So at that point, I'm like, I got everything I need at this point, right? I'm off to the races. And then that bled over into the opportunity to finally get out of Silicon Valley. So, yeah. But, the thing to remember is, you know, you have to be intentional in your pursuits as opposed to, as you see folks doing that, just shooting all over the place, just trying to get whatever they can and like hoping some stick to the wall. Like, I think I'm in cybersecurity or I think I'm in support. You know, I think I'm going to be a project manager. You know, you got to be intentional for sure. Otherwise, you're just going to be all over the place. Or as I said in one of my videos, otherwise, you're just going to be at the hip desk. Somebody going to be like, stay down here, bro.
Yeah. Let me read this LinkedIn post to you because I thought about it was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
I shared it with my homie. We always have a lot of talks about this stuff. This dude is an IT specialist.
Yeah.
His post says, forget about cybersecurity entry-level roles. Build your own experience. Everyone's telling you to get an entry-level job to break into cybersecurity. The problem is those roles are either oversaturated or don't give you the hands-on experience.
Yeah.
That truly sets you apart. The solution, stop waiting for someone to hand you experience. Build it yourself. Here's how. Set up home labs, simulate real-world environments, practice tasks like vulnerability scanning, incident response, or configuring secure networks. 2, freelance or volunteer. Offer to secure nonprofits data or help small businesses with IT projects. These projects give you real-world impact and something to showcase. Document your work. Post about your projects on LinkedIn. Share what you did, how you solved problems, and the value you created. When you create your own experience, you're not just another entry-level applicant. You're showing decision makers that you can solve their problems today. In 2025, it's not about waiting for the perfect opportunity. It's about creating your own path. What's one thing you've done to build your own experience? Let's talk about it. So I think within that, he has some good points. But yeah. at the same time, the issues are when you tell somebody with not a lot of experience in the environment to set up real world.
Real world. What is real world?
They don't
look
know
like?
What that looks like.
Yeah.
When you tell them to practice vulnerability scanning and incident response, they don't really know what they would, like, how they would do it. I mean, yeah. you got to have to figure out how to research that and get yeah. pointed to the right direction. Because that's what happens. You got these like people doing a lot of stuff, but they don't know how to do it. The freelance or volunteer part is good. You just got to know how to structure it on a resume
yeah.
for it to actually show up. And yeah. hopefully it boils over to actually look like good experience that right. you gained. Now, document work part, I like that. I always tell clients, hey, let's post about what we're interested in on LinkedIn. Because as we want to get referrals or people to look up our profiles, they start seeing that you are working in this manner towards this certain goal. So all in all, it was good. I think his issue is that you're saying this and we don't know, hey, are you trying to get in cybersecurity or not? Because he's been in IT support for 4 years.
Yeah.
So how? So like, for example, this would be a red flag for me. How you go from security lead in 2019... How are you see this? Don't make sense. How are you from 2019 to 2023 security lead? Then you go to IT support technician. That don't yeah. make sense to me.
Probably maybe a layoff, maybe a layoff. And two, you know, I as a director, when I had managers under me and stuff, I would advise them when they were interviewing to, you know, kind of think through the realities of the industry now. Because a lot of times folks would look and be like, yo, how you, you know, go from this to this? Don't, I would say, you know, assume, you know, one, get them an opportunity to tell their story. But then on the other side too, sometimes people end up in a spot where they don't have enough experience. Then they kind of got to scale back down, you know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But the thing is, though, is like I always look at that as like, okay, people are like, well, why would you go backwards in your career,
right?
And like everything else has been, you know, IT
right.
support related. So it's like my question is, were you actually a security lead, or did you just put that? Because I've had resumes where somebody clearly doing help desk, and they put security analyst on there.
Yeah.
And I was like, anybody that get a chance to really look at your resume, going to see you actually were doing help desk. You weren't yeah. doing security analyst work.
Yeah.
So I was like, don't do that.
Yeah.
I was like, there are ways to kind of frame that. Like, I was talking to my homie right before this, and he was like, man, I'm pretty sure some security tasks he's doing on the support. I said, maybe, maybe not. I was like, for example, luckily, when I worked at TSA, I actually was doing a little bit of identity access management. But, of course, the help desk is not going to tell you you're doing IAM because they want you to stay in the help desk.
Right.
I was like, so a lot of times people ain't going to tell you you're doing identity access management. I literally have calls where I've talked to people and say, yo, you're doing a lot of IAM work.
Yeah.
I was like, what you trying to do now and do all this other stuff, you got more experience doing that. Lean into that. Learn about Okta. Learn about Microsoft Authenticator,
yeah.
SSO, all these different things. And lean into that more so than trying to reinvent the wheel. And when they do that, they tend to be a little bit more successful versus trying to go compete and learn all this other stuff that you want to learn just by being on the blue team. I'm always about, like, hey, making your strengths, like, super strong and going that route. That's always been my MO for the most part. So I kind of just wanted to throw that out there because it reminded me of what you were talking about. Of you know, like I said, a lot of us, we don't have a real plan. We just, you know, taking it as we go.
Yeah. Yeah, I posted that too. Well, I just recently posted about offering one-on-ones and stuff to people because there are a lot of people that reach out to me and I want to add some structure to it. But even in when I talk to people, I have like this roadmap template that I used. It's essentially the main thing in that is just being intentional. Like you really want to, when I talk to high school students, be it a nonprofit, right? After I get through my experience, before actually I even mention my experience, I tell them to close their eyes. It's an in a perfect world exercise, right? Close your eyes. Imagine where you want to live, how much money you want to make.
Yeah.
What kind of car you want to drive. All, you know, get all the vanity things out of the way. Now, part two, let's think about the longevity of this. How long do you want to do this? What do you want your savings to look like? Do you want to have kids? You want to be able to pay for your kids to go to school? Are you trying to be, you know, free? You want Rolexes or you want, you know, be able to afford the minivan and the home and the sub? Like, what are the things that are important to you beyond just the vanity level? Like, right, the vanity aspect of things, because you should enjoy your money and you should enjoy life, right? I had a student that, after talking about my experience, he's like, yeah, I want to live in L.A. I want to be making, I think he said, like $1 million a year. He's like, I want to be making like a meal or $900K. A cool little, you know, right out. Okay. He's like either LA or Miami. And he said he wanted to have one kid and he wanted to get married. And I'm like, okay, let's map this out. How long you think this is going to take? He's like, man, honestly, probably after college, it's probably going to take me like 2-3 years to get to that and do a little content thing in between, make that pop. I'm like, bro, the content comes as a result of, ain't nobody just going to want to listen to you just because. Like, you got to go and get the experience first, right?
And what is he going to be doing to make the million?
Yeah, so his thing was, again, broadly, cybersecurity. Like, cybersecurity, I'm like, what is that? What in cybersecurity exactly do you want to do? He was like, I want to stop the bad guys. I'm like, stop them from doing what?
When you say that, I know why they think like that.
Yeah.
We have people on here that sell any boot camp they can get an affiliate link to.
Yeah.
And tell people that it should work. Like, for example, this guy, me and you both are familiar with him. I'm not going to... I don't have any personal issues with him, but just like the way he does stuff is stupid.
Yeah.
He was like, hey, did you know you could be a millionaire in crypto without buying any crypto? And then he started giving a rundown of this, but he probably don't know, but a lot of people only knew that he was talking about one of our mutual friends' situations. One of our mutual friends works for a crypto company. He has a lot of equity, where his equity is about to be like $1 million.
Yeah.
And so in the post, he was pretty much telling his story. It was like, yeah, I got this guy I know, he does this and this, and all this going to happen, and then they're going to be a millionaire. It's just like, so if you want to do the same thing and be a millionaire in crypto, like comment crypto, you get the link to the whatever. He ended up taking the post down because I sent it to my homie. I was like, yo, hopefully he give you a percentage of these signups he finna get out this boot camp. Yeah. But he took the post away. And I was like, I said, he can't do that because like everybody not going to be you.
That was a very like, neat. That was homie a release cases.
Is a security engineer and his base is 2-something.
Yeah.
On top of his equity.
Yeah.
It's like all these people aren't going to have those bases like that.
They're not.
Or negotiate the equity because he had already worked for big companies where he could come in and say, hey, when I worked at Robinhood, I had this. So I need to get this amount of money. And it's like everybody's not going to be able to do that. So I was like, stop telling people that. You know?
Yeah.
Like, going around and, like, because he don't, like, my friend, like, during the pandemic, like, he got into lifestyle stuff. He had supercars, stuff like that. But he never was telling people, hey, how you can be a millionaire in cybersecurity because he made smart investments.
Yeah.
Was able to get his net worth like that, but it wasn't strictly just off cyber. Cyber helped him get there.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are not saying that. Like, of course, if you do it the right way, like, if, you know, shout out to Justice, you want to do it the right way, start your own company, work C2C. And then you can charge whichever you want to, and you probably be a millionaire faster.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are just trying to tell you, like, the job stack, what you can do. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's hard, and a lot of people who are job stacking aren't at high levels.
Yeah.
They're, like, at beginner level, so they got 2 or 3 jobs where they're, like, very busy.
Yeah.
Where most of us know the more experience you get, you really are hired to solve, like, just complex issues or whatever. So you really don't work all the time.
Yeah.
Unless, like, you might have a day where you're super busy with meetings or whatever. But normally, it's just more reactionary.
Right.
And that's actually a more viable way to job stack versus being, like, a tier one and having to do all this work, whatever.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I saw a post. I think it was yesterday, actually. I sent it to my wife, and a dude had grabbed the AI, Kanye AI voice. And he's like, you ain't job stacking, you're moonlighting. And that's illegal. So I think a lot of folks, too, you see people in situations where they will job stack or take the advice of, like, you know, like an online guru or something. They're like, yo, stack these remote jobs. Number one, folks going back to the office. A lot of people going back to the office, for one. Number two, if you look through your, which I always advise people that come to me and they're like, yo, I got 2 roles. I'm like, make sure, because these companies, they will sue you. They will sue. They'll sue you. They will sue you for breach of contract. If you ain't reading your employee handbook and it's saying that no moonlighting explicitly, like, it don't matter the terms of whatever your agreement was with the external company. Sometimes, as I've seen in the past as well, they'll reach out to the other company and you'll end up in a situation where it's like, yo, your bridge is burned both ways, left and right, and you without a job now. So, you know.
I think it just depends. Also, like, as long as it's like non-compete. I looked through that before doing that a couple of times. So it's like, if it's not in the same industry.
Right.
They're not the same time.
It's broad for tech because they'll try to say in some of the contracts and stuff, when, you know, the employment contracts, they'll try to say you can't do the range of same work. It's like, okay, I can either, from a legal perspective, I can finesse this and I can say this isn't enterprise-based technology work, right? What I'm doing on your side of the fence is enterprise-based. What I'm doing on this side of the fence is consultant-based, right? Those are 2 separate domains. From the legal principle side of things, you can argue that in court and it could potentially hold up. But realistically, once you get into the space, now they just make it more broad where they're just like, no moonlight.
But I would just tell them, okay, if you want to tell me that, then
you need to make up their income.
I'll say, y'all can acquire no more companies.
And that's the thing. And that's why I was excited about, we'll see what happens in 2025, but that's why I was excited about non-competes potentially, you know, being done away with. Because for, number one, the vast majority of Americans, I think I read an alarming statistic the other day that said like 78% of Americans have to have a second job, right?
Yeah.
But in tech, there's that bottom tier thought process of, you know, the inflation of your lifestyle, lifestyle inflation as a result of being in tech.
Lifestyle creep.
Yeah. But then there's also the reality that the tech industry, this is like the 2000s. It's not as stable as it used to be. So realistically, especially if you're working in like a mid to late stage startup, they are, number one, if you have the knowledge and the wisdom to understand and kind of reading the writing on the wall, a late-stage startup could be, you know, entertaining an exit, and you can read the writing on the wall in terms of, like, how they bringing people in. Like, oh, they're not giving as much equity now, and we late-stage, you know? So they might be eyeballing an exit. That might mean they finna start some layoffs, you know? So in a lot of ways, that consulting piece for people that are in tech is almost a necessity, because it's like, yo, in the in-between of whatever may happen, even with big tech now, right? I think Meta in Fort Worth or whatever, or in Arlington one.
I know they're Austin for sure.
Yeah, Austin. Even with them doing layoffs in like, you know, a low cost of living place like Texas, it was a lot of people that were like looking for jobs immediately. Like, yo, I got laid off. I got 6 weeks of severance. But it's like, yo, what am I doing in between, right? So when you as an employer kind of take away that ability to, you know, have that safety net to continue to use your skill, you kind of put your folks in a bad spot. But a lot of employers don't care about that. They just want you to work.
Yeah. But, you know, it's funny. When you said, it's funny that you said low cost of living.
Yeah.
Texas not as cheap as it used to be.
It's not, bro. When we first started, we've always, I'll say, my wife had to come around too, but when, you know, you used to, even Atlanta too, bro. When you used to look at those houses out there, it'd be like, yo, $350, $450, $650, like top of the line. Now, you know, it's like, bro, like $750, $850, you got to spend almost $1 million. Even in where we are, close to the McKinney area, right, even there, it's like three-bedroom, single, like flat homes, $750. I'm like, bro, like this is essentially supposed to be a starter home. If you coming out, you know, and you say, for example, you not a tech professional, right, and you not making six figures.
Yeah.
Realistically, and that's a broader economic issue at this point in time that a lot of people are aware of, but, like, what are we supposed to do, you know? So, yeah.
And then if you want to go, like, now back home, I can spend $300,000 and get a four-bedroom house. Yeah. Actually, less than that.
Yeah.
I can get
like in Louisiana.
You can actually get a fixer-upper.
Yeah.
They barely exist out here.
They barely
exist. If they do exist, it's in an area that's not close to your job.
Right, right.
So
yeah,
you got all those different things going on. So they always try to say, like, that's why you got to be aware, like what you see on Twitter or something. Like, hey, millennials don't want to stay in fixer-uppers and all this. I say, that's not true. Everybody,
I would love a fixer-upper.
Everybody's building these fast new constructions. Yeah. So you got to make sure you get a good.
Good deal.
Not an appraiser, but a good inspector.
Yeah.
Hey, we ain't moving into none of this stuff fixed.
Yeah.
Or the deal's off the table.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. Because if you go with their inspectors, of course they're going to tell you it's done.
It's good, yeah. Not only would they, I had a friend in Atlanta bought his house and it happened to him where they put together like I can't remember what he called it. I think he called it like a construction paper house. And he had a bunch of issues with it. But he initially went with their inspector and his dad was like, no, get your own inspector and go back. And the first thing they told him was the inspector told him it was good, but we're going to give you a 1-year warranty as well. So he had like walls, like sheetrock falling down and stuff. And he's like, yo, can I use my warranty? And of course, it's like kind of like cars, like, oh, we only meant the powertrain, right? Yeah,
you gotta so he, do all that stuff.
Yeah.
You better throw it in ChatGPT.
Yeah, yeah. He ended up in a situation where he had to go back and fix stuff. But to the larger point, going back to employers and the way that they kind of structure these, you know, job offers, one, to what you said earlier, that's rare for someone to get a bunch of equity in some cases. And this is how you read the writing on the wall. And that's why I'm thankful to God that I had the experiences with, you know, startups that I have and being able, they always talk about a seat at the table, right? I don't really hear this knowledge a lot amongst Black people where you can see how an organization is moving and figure out what their long-term thoughts are. Whereas, okay, 6 months ago, right, you brought in a staff engineer and you gave him $250 cash. You gave him $80,000 in, you know, shares or stocks or RSUs, whatever the case may be. But then immediately after that, they start devaluing. It was already monopoly money. And then the next step engineer comes in for a separate group, right? Same app, similar experience, more cash, no equity. And it's like, okay, what y'all, so this person ain't got no equity. Y'all are either collapsing these shares amongst the executive team because you're eyeing an exit, one, or you're looking towards, looking for an exit to sell, you're looking for an exit to go public because you want to keep those shares and those will be accessible to the public. Or three, you don't plan on keeping this talent long. And that's the part that I try to stress to people. If you get to a startup, and some of the bigger companies are doing this too now, but they, transparently, I'll say, Microsoft is really good at this. Microsoft will be, Google does it some as well, but they like to have full-time employees. Microsoft does a really good job of when they hire you in some instances, and it's a super niche role outside of sales, right? If it's a super niche role, they will, in some instances, based on the hiring manager, ask you, like, are you interested in this as a contractor? Like, would you be willing to do this as a contractor type of thing? Because, again, you can get the big salaries. You can get, you know, $200, $250 on paper. But what you don't know is the $250 on paper without RSUs can signal sometimes that they don't even plan to keep you that whole year. Mm-hmm. You are a function of, you know, growth to the external investors in one instance. And then two, there could be something that they're working on specifically that they know that you can do. And they're like, yo, we're going to say $250 on paper, but he only going to get $130 of that because we're keeping him for 6 months, right? If you come in and it ain't a runway, like we talk about 30, 60, 90, right? Your 30, 60, 90 day runway is hit the ground running for real. Of course, people can have high impact projects that they want you to hit the ground running on. But if your runway is essentially like, get to work right now, like, bro, you got to pay attention to that timeline. And going back to the earlier point, you take away the opportunity for tech people to support themselves in those instances where you come back like, hey, your role's been, you know, impacted. 6 months in, right? Your role's been impacted. I'm sorry. Yeah. Like, what I'm supposed to do now?
That's one of the things me and my friend, we would talk about a lot of times. Like, a lot of times when people are interviewing,
yeah,
they're not researching the job financials.
Yeah.
Or they're like, you know, it may be not something to ask sometimes. But normally a recruiter will let me know, like, if it's a bonus structure.
Yeah.
She'll normally let me know how good the company is by saying, I can't remember the last time we didn't get a bonus.
Yeah.
So that let me know, okay, y'all doing good.
Yeah.
Then you got places like, oh, we ain't get our bonuses. What's going on here?
Yeah.
That's what made my homie leave Robinhood. He seen what was going on with Robinhood. Jetted.
Yeah.
He was there. So let's talk about how you got on to Netflix.
Yeah. So Netflix left Atlanta, as I mentioned earlier, you know. I was very intentional. I had this roadmap of one, my foundation was support. I knew I wanted to function through support. I knew I wanted to get into IT management. Primary reason for that was I wanted to provide more opportunity for Black people. I didn't see a lot of us, you know. One of my first managers, which I want to talk about as we had a manager conversation. one of my first managers was a Black man, really inspired me in a lot of ways. But got to Georgia Tech, got that experience, right? Got to the startup, got that cloud and SaaS app experience. From there, I'm like, yo, pinnacle, top of the top is Silicon Valley. Was very intentional trying to get out to the West Coast. Made it out there. It was a weird transition, too, because in between the time of me quitting, which goes back to the conversation we were just having about the mid to late stage startups, right? I got the offer from Netflix, right? That was November or December of 2019, kind of going into COVID, got that offer, found out I had cancer, right? And I called the recruiter back, and I'm like, I need some time to decide if I'm moving forward because I'm waiting. I just found out I got cancer. I'm just waiting, you know, to see what's going on with that. She's like, oh, yeah, take a week, you know, or so. But in between that, once I accepted the role, had the surgery or whatever, thank God, you know, there was nothing left. I didn't have to have any additional stuff done there after that surgery. But after the surgery, accepted the job, we was in line getting my meds after the surgery, called my potential manager back, and I'm like, I want to go into management, like IT management for sure. Like, and I'm looking to, when I come, I'm looking to gain X, Y, and Z experience because I already had a roadmap, right, that I want to work towards there. So accepted that job at Netflix. We planning to move out to California from Atlanta. Had to start out in the Bay, move out to the Bay from Atlanta. And I called my manager at the startup And I told him, like, hey, sorry to let you know I accept another role. He was like, oh, thank God. Because we were just about to reduce IT. I'm like, it's only me and one other person. What y'all mean? He was like, yeah, man, we're looking at some venture capital money, additional venture capital money, and they already have their own IT team. And they come in and they implement things in a different way. So all of the work that you were doing was along their roadmap of their attaching to their tech stack. So Okta for IAM, right, attaches to, from a multi-tenant organization perspective, right? They have Okta in place because they manage multiple orgs. Jamf, they're 100% Mac, right? All of that stuff. So I'm like, dang, this crazy. You know, God gave me another opportunity.
Was they going to break you off with a severance or something?
No, bro. So oddly enough, right, that when I told them that I got another opportunity and that I'd be leaving, I gave them the date or whatever, and I was still in between with that insurance, bro, they were in a situation where literally the HR person came back to me and tried to negotiate my insurance with me. She was like, okay, you can stay on paper, right? We still got some work for you to finish up. We need you to, they wanted me to create like a documentation binder or whatever of everything that I was doing and working on and stuff to hand it off to the venture capital firm, which I did. But they viewed that as the severance. So that went on like another 2-3 weeks. And they're like, we'll let you stay on. I'm like, I gave y'all the, you know, I told y'all I'm getting ready to go or whatever. So they viewed that as a severance. Two, no, they wouldn't plan on giving severance because once I got out to, I was working for Netflix, 2020, right? And they started laying people off. And some of the people that were reaching out to me were like, yo, you know of any jobs out there? They only gave us 2 weeks severance. So they probably would have gave me the same or less, you know, in that regard. But it was really good that, you know, God had that lined up like that because I was like, finna get laid, unbeknownst to me, finna get laid off. And I'm thinking like, oh, yeah, these are multi-year projects, you know, that I'm working on. But I was speeding through them. And I think the reason they were, you know, happy about that in a lot of ways is because, like, all right, this guy's speeding through this stuff. And it's also speeding up our timeline to be able to attach our business to this venture capital firm. And then, you know, eyeball a percentage exit, right? So anyway, got out to Netflix as a result of that. The interview process at that time was hard. One thing I use that, right, as an example when I talk to kids or college students specifically that are going into corporate America. That interview for me was really about standing out, right? Beyond what you could see, me just being this black dude, right, from Atlanta, I wanted my experience to shine through. But something else that I've learned along the way is really beneficial to be personable and likable. So one thing that I did in that, in terms of standing out, I had in-person interviews. They flew me out, which was great. Loved it. Flew me out, put me in a nice hotel, whatever. And the night before the interview, I was in the hotel and came up with this idea. I had wrote out cards, like personal cards to each person thanking them. And the recruiter had already kind of gave me the breakdown as to what we'd be talking about. She was like, you know, this person is going to talk about tech stuff. But in that, I photoshopped myself the Netflix mantra thing is like the dream team, right? So I grabbed a photo of Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson as a dream team, and I can send to see the dream team photo when they had their arm over each other, and I put Netflix logo on Magic Johnson's head, and I put my head on Michael Jordan, and I was like,
funny.
Yeah, I see myself joining, you know, this is me joining the dream team, and I wrote a personal note to everybody. And they're like, yo, that was a really good touch. So I always advise people to try to stand out in any way that they can.
See, I be trying to do that, but every time I do thank you or something like that, I'm like, yeah, we moving on.
Yeah.
It's only worked for me like a couple of times.
Yeah. Now, man, and I don't know if it was you I was talking to or that I texted about that or whatever when we talked the first time, where it's like, yo, the interpersonal aspect is truly gone. Like the thing that's most, I don't know, it feels like a crap shot now to figure out how to impress people because it used to be, I think I made a video about it, like it's a bad thing to reach out to the, like hiring managers are offended by you reaching out now. They used to be the bread and butter, you know?
Yeah, for me, they never offended because it like help you out, especially, you know, with something a little wonky with their application process.
Yeah.
Like, let me reach out to the person that posted about this job. I'm like, yo, hey, I see you just started here. My name is so-and-so. I got this experience. I think I'd be a good
person. Yeah. I think because in tech now, and I'll give it to you, think about Netflix, right? But I think now in tech, because there's so many people getting laid off and moved around, that now the tips and tricks, again, because of, you know, the internet situation, everything related to tech now, because there's so many people talking about it, it's kind of an oversaturated thing where all of the hidden tips and tricks that people will talk to you about, now everybody doing it. Everybody reaching out to the hiring manager, right? So they get a little bit overwhelmed. But yeah, man, got that opportunity at Netflix, went out there, joined the company, and kind of, you know, went to the win from there.
Yeah. So, I mean, all right, two things. First.
Yeah.
There had to be a crazy offer for you to say, man, you're finna move to the West Coast.
It wasn't. Well, one, it was. It was starting out, I think it was like 125, 130. Crazy thing is, bro, we was in Atlanta. We wasn't doing bad in Atlanta. My wife was working multiple jobs. Shout out to her. She's working multiple jobs. She's working at Emory, Choa, and
wait, what, Emory?
Yeah, she was working. She was working, working. So for me as a man, I'm like, all right, bro, like, we got a son now. You know, my wife working multiple jobs. Man, then the cancer aspect of it came on. So then the thought of legacy came. I'm like, bro, I want to leave something behind, right? So that started really to kind of push me. But the biggest thing for me in that, honestly, was just progression. Just like, because we had always, you know, as I mentioned, from Mississippi to Georgia, and then up to Atlanta. It was kind of like, you know, we always kind of been moving around. That was our vibe. And we went out. One thing I didn't mention, my old job, they had bought a business in San Francisco. And I had an opportunity to go out. My wife went with me and my son. That was our first time in California. And we went to, dang, I can't remember where we went to. We went somewhere over the bridge, and it was just beautiful. We were like, yo, this is it, right? And we decided, like, yeah, we're going to be intentional in trying to get out here. Mind you, I already wanted to go to Silicon Valley because I'm like, I'm elite. You know, in my mind, I'm like, I'm elite. I need to get out here and get this on. You know what I'm saying? Like, be out here with the big dogs, you know? So that worked out. But, yeah, it was a good offer. That was my first time breaking over into. So when I was at the startup, as that IT manager, I was at 89.9. It was like 89.99, right? And I had a meeting with my manager one day or whatever. I was like, yo, I need like a little bit more because I'm doing I found out. I talked to somebody at Atlanta Tech Village one day that was right next door. And he mentioned all the stuff they was doing. And he was talking about they using contractors because it can be expensive. And they was implementing the same stuff out. They wrote now Okta. He's like, yo, we paid a dude like, man, $140,000 for implementation. I'm like, hold on now. Like, just one guy? He's like, we got a whole team. We rolling out Jamf. We paid this young lady like $93,000 on a 12-week project, and then she gave us a roadmap to finish it out for our engineers. I'm like, hold on, I'm doing all of that, and I'm making, you know, $90K, right? My manager was like, probably not right now, maybe next year. But yeah, it was a good enough number for me to say, yeah, we can go ahead and go. Now, when we got there, that was a different situation because the cost of living, right, was astronomical.
Yeah, that's why I was like, were you able to negotiate like a sign on?
So the way that they structured the, and this might have changed, but the way that they structured it was more so like a contractor versus a full-time employee. So in California, they have some type of law or something where hourly employees get more benefits or whatever the case may be. So I was started out as an hourly employee, as an individual contributor. And then from there, you know, even though the salary was big, I still had to hit those hours, right? But then you could also get overtime because, you know, as a tech worker or whatever, I would just stay up after hours working tickets or whatever the case may be. So it ended up being like 160 in my first year or whatever in that IC role. I wasn't even in the IC role long. I was in the IC role probably like 3 months, and then I got promoted after being out there. But, yeah, man, I was ready for something new. Wanted to get to California and wanted to notch that Silicon Valley bucket on my get that head on. To kind of, you know, in my mind, add that validity to me as a tech professional.
Chase that dream.
Yeah.
Tech dream. Yeah, so, man, so honestly, like, you know, me and you actually have talked about that experience unfiltered online. Like,
yeah.
Without being as, you know, unfiltered we was on the phone.
Yeah.
How was that experience as far as just what you found out as being, like, a manager?
Yeah, so... being a manager, so I transferred the team that I joined as an IC. I ended up having an opportunity to manage that team, become the manager of that team. And I think I said earlier, one of the biggest things for me was, one, being very transparent, bro, I was super lonely, like going from Atlanta, having a whole hub, people that I was talking to, hanging out with, we lost our whole, like, you know.
Y'all tribe.
Yeah, we lost the tribe. Like, we threw the tribe, like, we like, all right, y'all, we going out here. Threw the tribe to the side, we going to Silicon Valley. Bro, we got out there, we was like, what have we done? We watching planes fly by, like, maybe they going to Atlanta or something, you know? So that part was hard, and then you take COVID on top of that, right? So then that removed your ability to
go out and meet people.
But then, too, before that, you know, even though we were still going out, people wasn't all that friendly, right? We had a super hard time finding a spot. I was, as the manager, I'm making well over. I'm in the 250s, right? People see this, great credit, 250s, right? You talk to them on the phone, they're like, yeah, come by, right? We looking in spot, we looking in Mountain View, bro. We looking in what's the other spot? San Jose. We looking all over Silicon Valley. We get there, we could be the highest earning couple there. Cause my wife was working at Stanford. Also, once we got there, right, we was making over 300, right? No, we don't. This place ain't available. People open the windows. I think this is going to be too loud for you. You know, they see us and you get a different response. Oh, dang, it just rented. So we had to.
So you felt like, in so many words, there's some discrimination.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. A lot of discrimination. And I wasn't prepared for that because, of course, on TV, when you see about California, you know, like, we're progressive and we're accepting and all of those things. Like, it was the complete. My very first night there, when we were staying in corporate housing, I went to Target in Sunnyvale, and I came out of Target, and there was two police officers, right? And guy walked up to me, hand on gun, walked up to me coming out of Target, right? Had earphones in, I'm listening to, I think I was listening to like a Joe Budden podcast or something, and I'm laughing. And he walked up, he was like, sir, they called about, you know, they said a black male in Target was a shoplifting. I'm like, what, you stopped the only black dude in Sunnyvale? So it was those types of experiences that was just wearing me down, right? External to work. But then when you got to work, you saw that reflected, right? So again, going back to what it was like being a manager, for me, it was really hard in that because, again, I'm a very boisterous and loud, you know, life of the party type of person. To transition from an IC to a manager because I still had within me this thought of being liked and making people comfortable. So, you know, a lot of times I'll go into a room and I'll be very, you know, homie, cool with folks. Whereas I should have been always had my manager hat on and being, you know, very like forward and like, this is what we're going to do and those types of things, which I learned after the fact. But the part that, and I'm fine being transparent about it, the part that got tricky for me there was as a manager, specifically a black manager, right? Especially in 2020 with all that was happening. Was finding my footing in being myself and that flowing as a manager and then people being comfortable with it, right?
Yeah, the balance.
Yeah. So as that came through, that started to shine through and, you know, my work was coming through and stuff. Even in that, I ended up having a transition of a manager. So the guy that hired me first was great with, you know, we vibe really well. Then I ended up transitioning to a manager on kind of the second promotion part. So first part, 3 months promoted, another promotion to kind of the global aspect of things. And then with that came another manager, and he was an older gentleman. And in that, we just were not seeing eye to eye because he didn't agree with my methods of management in the way of, you know, hey, I'm not going to micromanage, or hey, I'm not going to be on top. These are adults. Most of them are older than me. These are adults. These people know what they're doing. A lot of them been there longer than me. Most of them still there. Some of them still there, right? In that, you know, there became this thing that I wasn't aware of, again, coming from Atlanta, right? I'm used to, you know, working with other black professionals, and it's a very, like, you know, quote-unquote chill vibe, right? To go to this point where this person is, or this environment is very stifling to me as a professional, right? It feels very, like, it's like you got a coat on that's too small. It's like, yo, I can't break out of this, right? And as I said, with the discrimination aspect of it external, you start to see that reflected internal, where it's like, you ain't really got a reason not to, you know, vibe with me. My work good. I'm hitting all the KPIs.
So you felt like it was a culture thing.
It was a culture fit. It was a culture thing for sure. One, because, you know, and I think we as black people have to be comfortable understanding. I was talking to my wife about it, this specifically. I think like last week or so, and I said to her, you know, we as black people have to get away from the idea of creating in our minds the perfect world and then assuming we live in that reality. Mm-hmm. Because the truth of the matter is,
it's not perfect.
It's not perfect. There are people in the tech industry for real, all industries. But my wife is like, yo, it's the same in Chick-fil-A, McDonald's, and anywhere else, right? But in tech specifically, because in a lot of ways, I think we only represent, 7% of the makeup of tech workers, black people, right? When you get into this dynamic, there are so many tricks and traps that we are unaware of in that dynamic specifically, right? So somebody could trick you up in your delivery of, you know, a project or something, right, that you're unaware of, you wouldn't see coming. Somebody could trick you up in company culture. specific to a tech company, right? That you, because they're very ambiguous in, like the Facebook thing where they got rid of folks because of the gift card thing, right? It's very ambiguous in that, right? And I think for me, there ultimately I end up getting let go, right? But for me in that situation, the thing that led to that was really, as I said, which prompted my series being green. I had no idea the amount or the level of maneuvers that they had, you know, in their pocket or that could be used, not only in corporate America, but tech specifically. And then as a black person, when you are up against the wall like that already, you know, and they're aware of that environment because they come from that, you know, people come from that environment, say in California, Silicon Valley, right? They know that, you know, you ain't comfortable. One, I was being very transparent.
Or they had friends and family that went to Ivy League school.
Yes. Yeah. And that's the thing, too. It really wasn't a lot of people. I think I worked with maybe two people. Both were black that went to Harvard. One went to Harvard. One went to Penn State. And these are Ivy League, you know, schools, colleges, right? Both of them were black. Everybody else was like Ed Netflix, community college. There was a person that had like a culinary degree at one point. There was an art major, history major. These people are working at like these top tier companies. So essentially, in a bigger thought of it, in the reality of it was, these people were just in proximity of these opportunities, right? And these folks are aware of it. So then you end up in a situation where, you know, you are more so battling the culture of the area versus just being able to come in as a person with a degree.
Right.
You know, at the time I had a master's degree, forgot to say that, did the master's degree as well, got out there.
Kennesaw.
Did the Kennesaw. And then you get there and you're like, all right, I'm poised. Like, this is where I'm supposed to be, right? But then that aspect of it, which is where the nonprofit came from, ended up getting let go at Netflix, right? And that came as a result of just a series of, it was like trap doors, right, that I was unaware of, right? So, for example, right, there would be a situation where you would have a meeting. And that was on me again, being green. Where you would have a meeting and I would ask my new manager, yo, to come to these meetings, right? And in these meetings, I'm very, like, we had, like, a pass the wand thing, right? And I would just let people kind of just vent about what they were talking about, right? And I would get feedback on that, like, yo, that's not, you shouldn't be letting people vent or talk about they, you know. We were trapped in the house. It was COVID at the time, right? And people being very transparent and like, yo, I'm lonely. I'm having a hard time. Like, I need, you know, to log on later and stuff. And to me, that was those are valuable insights as a manager because it provides an opportunity for me to support you better. But then for my, you know, manager at the time, he's like, yo, this ain't what you should be doing. And it's making me question whether or not, you know, you should be a manager here and stuff.
Instead of him saying that, did they give you a solution to what you should have been doing?
No, that was no. And that's the thing. I didn't know that, right? One, I didn't know that these things should be. First of all, if your manager, any feedback your manager gives to you needs to be documented. It needs to be documented. It needs to be, if they prefer verbal communication, let it be verbal. And then you follow up with an email or you follow up with some type of written something to make sure that you document that the first time, whether it's good or bad, which I always tell folks that I talk to, always document those conversations with your manager, especially if it's around your performance, especially in tech, because there's a lot of ambiguity in tech that can be, yo, he ain't delivering on time, or yo, I noticed, you know, X, Y, and Z. So, but no, there were no solutions in that. It's just like, I noticed this, I don't like it, see you later type of thing. So, yeah.
Okay. How are we looking on time? Okay. Cool. Yeah, we probably wrapped up. We gotta put the last one for 2024 and you know, go out with a bang.
How much time did we get?
We good.
Okay.
Yeah. Cause I was gonna ask you, cause like I said, I've learned through that too. Like, I know, like, you're right. Like, every time if I talk to either my director, my manager, right after that, they're sending an email saying what we talked about, discussed, yada yada.
Post conversation summary.
Yeah,
yeah.
Or like, you know, I think maybe in your situation, hindsight's 2020, maybe them probably should have just been one on one conversation.
Yeah.
And you took them. I don't know if you take things like that. You go to HR and for a post on like how these people are doing since they got to work from home and can't communicate with people.
I mean, so we had this thing that where that we created where it was this virtual portal that kind of everybody sat on and they worked. So it was kind of like working together except virtually, right? So for me, again, as a manager, and that's just a lady that I follow on IG. I don't know if you follow her as well, but she is like this millennial manager where it's like, no, take your time off. I was that manager where I'm like, no, I have an understanding, which is where that intentionality came in, right, of building up from support at Mississippi State all the way there. It's because you need to be able to fill in for folks. Like, right, if I'm a play to five like LeBron, right, if I'm a play to five, I need to be able to jump out and play, you know, point guard as well from time to time. So, right, if I had a person on my team, that's what I really hung my hat on, which was, you know, just being easy to work with and likable. That was the biggest part for me as a manager, making sure that I was there to support those folks. So that those insights for me were very valuable where, yo, I'm having a hard time. I need to log on later. It's like, okay, I'm up at 7 anyway, so I can, you know, respond to your tickets. I drop them in your queue. If it's something I can, you know, take care of from the technical perspective, I know you're the owner of whatever this may be. I'll take care of it as well and then make sure I drop it in your queue, that type of thing. So I was really building those interpersonal relationships with them. But then again, there was a lot of ambiguity in that, again, that I didn't know how to manage that, or at least to validate that feedback that I was getting around just the interpersonal aspect of things. So, you know, I think it was a situation, honestly, as I said, everybody ain't for everybody. And I think for my new manager, he was a very, like, you know, chill dude, kind of calm. He come in the room like, hi, how are you? I'm coming in like, you know, every meeting he come in, I'm playing music first.
You know what this remind me of?
What's that?
Did you watch Insecure?
Yes. Oh, man.
Do you remember at the time when Molly was at the law firm and the other black girl was there and she was being real loud and all this other stuff? Molly tried to pull us to the side like, hey, yo, yada, yada, yada. Yeah. And she wasn't hearing it.
Yeah.
Then right after that, you saw them kind of talking to her. I don't know if they let her go or something, but they kind of like reprimanded her. Yeah. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah. It gets to a point, honestly, bro, and this is a broader conversation for black people in corporate America where it's not to generalize us in any way, but in a lot of situations, we just sometimes don't fit. And you get to a point, that's what it came to for me while being there, is like, you know, yo, how much of me am I willing to
sacrifice
for the sake of this role? For the sake of this role, right? I'm in California. I done moved my family 36 hours across the country, bro. We out here. And at that point, you know, leading up to that, we had moved to LA for the other part of the role at that point. I loved LA, loved it, right? And it got to a point where it's like, okay, how much of myself am I willing to sacrifice? And I think that's a question a lot of black people come to in corporate where it's like, okay, I can code switch a little bit. Like I can be professional, right? Or what the generally accepted understanding of professionalism is, I can do that. But then it comes to a point, which is what I wanted to mention as well there, in that in my situation specifically, where we were very transparent in 2020 with black people, were very transparent in 2020 with the things that were bothering us, right? The things that we kept internal, the conversations that we would have with our husbands or our wives or our family members, right? Where it's like, yo, George Floyd got killed and I'm having a hard time working at work today because this is representative. This is bringing up, you know, omens of Trayvon was our Emmett Till, right? Mm-hmm. The Trayvon situation, right? And for our parents, it was, or our grandparents, rather, it was Emmett Till, right? And it's just a continuation of that. So when you are a manager, thinking of the function of managing someone out, whether it's for their technical ability, whatever the case may be, whether you just don't like them, it made it very easy during that time frame to be able to implement the utility of microaggressions because you aware, I see you woe down already. I see it on you. You look like you've been crying as a manager, right? Looking at Blake, you look like you've been crying. I can lean on that a little bit, right? Oh, I noticed, you know, we had meetings. I have never seen so many instances where people had their hairstyles mentioned or people would like gaslight other black people, right? Mentioning like, yo, did you see the news? How you feel about that, right? People doing like fake check-ins and it was wearing black people down to the nub, right? And it got to a point.
See, I've never been played with like that.
Yeah.
Because I've been like, oh, did you see that last school shooting?
Don't play with me. Yeah, that's the thing. I don't go tip for tat, you know.
Sometimes you got to, though.
Yeah, the thing, man, it's such a hard thing.
You got to draw that line.
Draw that line, yeah.
Because like, hey, don't play with me like that. I won't play with you like that.
Yeah, that's the thing. So that's where the ambiguity exists. That's why it's best to just maintain draw that line of professionalism really early on, mm-hmm. so that when situations like that come up, where, you know, it's kind of a race-based trick or trap or anything in that regard, you have the foundation to address it on, as opposed to, which in a lot of cases was what a lot of people relied on, you jumping out of character, right? I'm going to mention this and I'm going to sit back like, yo, what's the problem type of vibes, right? But for me, man, it got to a point where I was just, you know, you get talked to kind of crazy. Like, I consider myself to be the articulate thing, right? You're very articulate, right?
What does that mean as a black person?
Yes, bro. You start to wear like, what you mean by that, right? Instances, you know, where the feedback that you were giving really wasn't actionable. It gets to a point for me where it's like, okay, how much of myself am I really willing to adjust? Because the adjustments that I'm being asked to be made is in lieu of me as a person. Like, I am a fun, life of the party, boisterous person, right? I can chill on, you know, jumping in like, yo, how y'all doing or whatever. But what I can't compromise on is being me. And I think I would advise, which is what I do through the nonprofit, as a result of all of those experiences, right? At Netflix specifically, I kind of stepped to the side. One, as I was looking for a mentor, my next opportunity, I couldn't find it. It's like, number one, why didn't I know how, you know, what it looks like when someone is intentionally trying to manage you out? Why didn't I know about, you know, these tricks that are being employed when, you know, someone asks you, for example, we had a guy that got let go there, and he was asked to kind of offset all of his work, right, to someone else. And then there was another manager in his manager meetings and stuff. I'm like, why is there no one telling us this stuff, right? So that was the intent of, out of my experience, right? That's the intent of my nonprofit, which is to be very transparent about, thankful to God, bro, that we were able to get out of that situation and then get right back on track. But everybody ain't so lucky, right? Everybody does not have the same opportunity to go in these situations and make mistakes. It goes back to the twice as good ideology, right? You don't have an opportunity as a black person a lot of times to go into these situations and make mistakes and then come out unscathed, like, woo, like, yo, that was crazy. Let me get back to it. It's a real, you know, transition where in some cases that I've seen, even where people literally, you can lose your career, especially in tech, bro. You can lose everything off the word of one person. It's literally like a mob in a lot of instances where you look at, you know, FANG situations, right, where tech is really small. And if you mess up or you make a mistake or you do something that even, you know, moves the needle just a tad bit, word gets out, right? Word travels fast, especially in that circle. That's something else I came to realize too, right? Where, you know, you really have to be very careful and meticulous in the way that you move, in the way that you respond. And then there are other people on the other side that are aware of that fact as well. Where they're like, okay, if I can push this button and I know I'm going to get this response, and I can use that to my advantage to get you out, I'm going to do that, right? So, yeah, it was a wild experience, but I'm definitely thankful for it, for sure.
Yeah. And to move on from that, to not beat a dead horse, because we probably could have a whole episode.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Okay.
So now, I think you did one more job after that before using the job that you was in, that you're in now, right?
Yeah. So after that one, I ended up in D.C. So it's funny, too, the way God worked that out, because in high school, my wife and I, we were talking about, I was always talking about California, New York. I was always talking about California, New York. And I think top of mind for her, both of us actually were talking about Virginia. So we ended up in Virginia, got a job in D.C., first on paper director role. And in that is learned a lot, right? And that's where the organizational structure side of things came into play. Kind of where I sit now, having that, you know, when I talk on my page, about the broad understanding of this is how you can read the writing on the wall as to how an organization is moving. Or this is how you can tell, you know, what to expect or where a company is without them saying it. That understanding really came during that experience as a director, where I was able to build out a department, build out an org, and all of those things in there. So, but again, in that situation, ended up getting laid off at the end of that after building out an org, right? Because they ended up eyeballing an exit, and they sold to a company overseas. And they were like, yo, we want to keep you. Same instance as in Atlanta, where they were like, yo, we want to keep you for a little bit so that you can kind of tie up these loose ends for us in utility to this company that we sold to. But yeah, that's why I went after that.
And then now you're in the current role.
Yeah, now, man, full circle again. God is good. Now we're in Texas, place we literally prayed for in this current role, global director. Now being able to use literally, there is not a function of my career that I am not using currently. So the other day, somebody reached out to me and they were like, yo, I don't know how, going back to the printers. Somebody mentioned like, yo, we got these new brother, they call them Mopiers, multifunction printers. And this dude was like, yo, I don't know how to log on to this from my machine or how to add it, right? And then the credentials are stored in the drivers. So I had to go all the way back to, you know, yo, God said, back to the basics. Had to go all the way back to the basics, find the printer, find a way to add his credentials to the actual driver so that it would add on to his machine so then he could go up and scan his card, right? And I'm like, yo, every function of my experience, even through, you know, the Netflix situation of how I communicate or how I, you know, kind of peep game on something, like, yo, they feel a little off, they feel a little familiar, you know what I'm saying? I'm using every function of my experience. So again, that goes back to my earlier point of being intentional. If you know what you want to do long-term, God willing, right? You keep God involved, bro. You get there. Once you get to that spot, you gonna have, you got your Easter basket of everything that you need to be successful in your perfect world role, right? And that's kind of where I'm at now with being able to use left brain and right brain, being able to be technical and being able to build out, you know, organizational roadmaps and build that out from a global perspective, figuring out follow the sun methodology, circling around on contractors as well, some of which that we, you know, using India and all those other places as well. So, yeah, man, it's dope. And I'm thankful to finally have an opportunity to be, man, out here in the DFW area, building connections, meeting with folks like you as well. So, yeah, it's dope for sure.
All right. So now I got a couple of questions we can ask, too, because I know I want to give the people some more gems.
Yeah.
Directly related to hiring.
Okay.
So to get a little bit more specific about your role, when you say global director, you're the global director over what?
So global director of IT. So essentially all things IT. So engineering is external to IT, but there's a dotted line back. So if there are instances where, you know, there's a delivery of a feature or something, I can request those, and I can also help through the management of those. But director of IT is around sysadmin, all of our, you know, business applications, support, and organizational development from the technical perspective of things. So as they simply put it, you know, anything with a screen on it is yours type of vibe.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. So when you're looking to hire people, what are you looking for? Are you looking for more technical skill? Are you looking for more soft skills or a mixture of both?
It depends on the role. So if I'm looking to hire someone, for example, we have a tier two role that we're looking for right now. What I'm looking for in that person is, say what now?
I might have somebody for you.
Yeah, send me for real. Send me that for real. What I'm looking for in that is someone who has experience in specific domains. So for example, right, if we were a Google organization and we're getting ready to do a migration of users from Microsoft to Google or vice versa, I want somebody that has done that before. I want you to be able on your resume, right, again, hitting those key points. I think we talked about that earlier. I saw the lady looking through resumes and I asked her, like, what are you looking for? And she's like, I'm looking at this job description and I'm looking at the requirements that the hiring manager gave me, which is represented in this job description, and I want to see that in the first 2 to 3 seconds that I'm looking, right? I'm skimming. And if I don't see that, I'm just going to move on, right? But in that, being able to show, you know, your teachability and one, just having an understanding of, you know, as a subject matter expert, an understanding of, a true understanding of what the tools are that are mentioned in the job description. So, for example, Okta. You need to know how to manage the dashboard and create containers for users and create those user profiles and build out, you know, application catalogs and all of those things, right? And then if I'm looking for somebody in help desk, that's more of a, you know, kind of a tier one role. If I'm looking for somebody in that range, just somebody that has a broad understanding, right? And then for me, if I'm interviewing that person and they're talking, you know, about home projects and things that they've done, I'm more willing to give them an opportunity because I can see, you know, that they're really interested in it. But for me, I'm a passion person. You know, a lot of hiring managers ain't really, they're just like, yo, can you get in here and work? And can I delegate this work to you tomorrow? And that's all they be looking at. So, yeah.
Piggybacking off of that, we talked about this before,
yeah,
off camera. How do you feel about certifications?
I feel like certifications are good, but not as what I don't want people to do. One, if you know, online or whatever, you need to vet the people that you are taking advice from, right? Realistically, if somebody is saying like, yo, you can get a six-figure job in 6 weeks, right? First of all, use your, you know, common sense in that, right? Six figures is nothing. It's, like, I know it's popular to say, you know, $100,000 ain't no money. But
most of America only make, like, $45,000, $50,000.
Yeah, man, you're still in a very small minority. So go into it with that understanding. First, don't just go and take a boot camp just for the sake of taking a boot camp, because you have to understand, and I sent that to you, right? The utility of certs, the thought of certifications has changed now. Hiring managers, when I was working at Georgia Tech, certs were literally like a big pat on the back. That was viewed as the thing that made you stand out as a professional, that said, yo, they're taking this seriously. This is along their trajectory of whatever they're going towards, right? And it looks good. Now, people assume that a cert is a guarantee of a job. And because of that cert culture that we see permeate specifically on social media, and I wish we had time to talk about, you know, just kind of the marketing aspect of it now. Yo, if somebody is just pointing out the vanity aspect of things, or the vanity aspect of a career.
We're going to get into that.
Yeah, if they just, yo, if your marketing strategy mirrors that of how to sell to the Negro, right? Y'all can look that video up. If it mirrors that, yo, you're going to get, you know, a Rolex. Or, yo, look at this. You know, you see the Range Rover, a Rolls Royce logo behind my head, bro. Think beyond, you know, the flashy cars and stuff, bro. And think, you know, realistically, like, what a life in this will look like. Because you can get in, but the thing is, you know,
stay in.
You can't stay in. And it's more about, that's what I preach. It's more so about longevity. And you need that experience for longevity. So I love certs. I have a bunch of certs myself. One thing I will say that I noticed with experienced professionals as I've been in corporate America is they don't really keep their certs up like that. They'll keep the high.
And nobody going to ask you if it's current either.
No, nobody's asking that. Now, when you get to the high ones, right, the ones that bring you money attached to your title, like the CISSP.
Yeah, you got to pay yearly for that.
You got to pay yearly for that.
That go in your negotiations for your salary.
Yes, it does, and it should. But people keep those up. But, you know, I think the previous job I worked at, there was a guy that had the Security Plus. He had the IDLE V3. He transitioned to the V4, and then he went back. And we were going to pay for his Security Plus to get updated because we were going to be working with a government contract, right? And it was a requirement. And when he came back and he was like, yo, I didn't even know my Security Plus was out of date. So that's my fault. We were going to pay for it, right? But then he decided, like, yo, this ain't even a project I want to work on. So do I still need to get this or what, right? And I was like, not if you don't want to. We got a full security team to work on it, right? And they're all Sig Plus certified. Those were Air Force folks that came from the Air Force. So they already had the Security Plus as a requirement. But in that, though, I started to notice people don't really keep them certs up. They'll get them, and then once it gets their foot in the door, right, even with the degrees, right, and I hate now we at a place where people are devaluing college so much. Yeah. You said WGU is a box check. WGU is a very, very specific box check, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, back in my day, when we were younger, right, you would see people going back to school that were the age that we are now, going back to school, I need my MBA. Why do you need your MBA, right? It feels like they're just going back to school. They going back to school because that's the only way they get into the next level.
Yeah. I have a video that I stepped up from Miranda's episode where we're talking about that. And people in the comments are like, well, if you want to progress, certain stuff, you're going to probably have to have that.
You got
to
have that
degree. Educate, especially if you're black.
Like, yeah.
Let's just be honest. Like, yeah. You're going to have to.
Yeah.
And, like, listen, bro, I got my SEC Plus in 2013. It is expired a long time ago.
Yeah. I kept mine up, but yeah, I kept it up.
I got the CYSA Plus back in 2019, expired.
Like, yeah.
It was just, at the time, just learning the knowledge, but like now, it's like, if there's no reason for it, like, I will only go and get like a CISSP, like, current, just because it needs to be current. But other than that, like, I'm not. Because, I mean, some of that stuff, I don't even really do on a day-to-day anymore, so.
Yeah.
I typically go after certs that enhance what I do at work.
Right.
Or will help me land, like, the next role.
Yeah.
I don't like to just get certs to just get them.
Yeah. I feel like, and I started making a video about this on my page, but I feel like the most valuable cert is the AWS, anything related to AWS practitioner. I feel like that's the most valuable common ground cert.
Yeah, I got that. I got the AZ-900.
Yeah.
So, I mean, both of all of them are saying they just got, like, different naming conventions.
Yeah.
When it comes to the thing. So, that's why I tell people, too. I say, hey, when it comes to the... At the end of the day, when it comes to, like, those entry-level cloud certifications, like, just try to pick one and get it.
Yeah, and get that. Now, but, yeah, I love certs. I love certs. You should get certs, but also, you know, again, going back to the intentionality.
Have a plan with it.
Have a plan with it, for sure.
Okay, this one is this one probably goes 2-on-2 with these two questions.
Yeah.
How you feel about boot camps and the influx of social media tech influencers?
Man, bad. So, my whole, before on my page, right, before I rebranded and started offering one-on-ones and stuff on my page, I was just doing photography, right? My wife bought me a Sony camera. And every time we go to New York, I'm like, I'm getting up at 5 and I'm going to take pictures, right? So I just had a bunch of pictures on there. And I came across videos of people on there. Man, just keep it a book. Just straight up lying to people, bro. And having like dozens and dozens of followers. Like, yeah, I want to break in the tech, you know. But here's a true nugget, right? There was a situation where, you know, you have an individual. There are situations, I would say. We have an individual that goes to a boot camp. They come in, they work. They get, for lack of a better term, exposed in terms of not having the technical knowledge that they should have as a result of going to said boot camp. And they end up losing the job, right? For me, as a black professional at, say, the executive or below level, right, knowing or seeing the trajectory and continuing to that, black people getting laid off or fired left and right, right? We constantly coming in these situations and we don't have the knowledge that we need and is being taken advantage of or exploited. For me, that's very predatory because the people who are selling these things, they know that. Once they get their money off their, you know, boot camp or whatever, they know, like, once you're in there, you're on your own. And you can hustle to a certain degree, but, like, situation I've been in before, if I hadn't have had an opportunity to set up Okta from scratch, when someone handed me an Okta ticket and said the person, the Okta administrator is out, for the next, you know, whatever, because he having a baby, fix it. If I didn't, you know, realistically go through that myself, I would have been like, yo, bro, I went to this boot camp. I would have been trying to call whoever I was like, bro, I need you to. And there's some instances where they'll do that. They charge for that. It's some boot camps you can go to and they'll be like, yo, I have a real world incident and I need help with it. And they'll help you out. Also, Reddit is your best friend. If you ain't got a Reddit account, please make a Reddit. Don't use Google for tech questions. Go to, if you got a question about something, especially if it's, you know, high tier or it's in, you know, a specific app or a niche, go to Reddit, bro.
You know what, though? Reddit is good, but Reddit also going to be sometimes full of complainers.
Reddit, oh my goodness.
Because you can't always say something going to go, like people that say school's a scam. Yeah. Some people majored in the wrong thing.
Right.
And they didn't do what they needed to do, so right. They couldn't find a job. Hey, it's a scam.
Yeah.
So you have people that will try to discourage people from going to good boot camp programs and say that was like, you didn't hold up your end of the bargain.
Exactly.
Boot camp gave you what you needed to be successful. Yeah. It'd be different if nobody was successful.
Yeah.
But then you didn't do what you need to do. Right. So now you're blaming the boot camp.
Yeah.
So it comes into like that. Like, I'm more concerned about the boot camps that you pay $5,000-$10,000 for.
Yeah.
And they're going to say you're going to get the Net Plus, Security Plus, and the A Plus.
Yeah. You can get those on your own. And they're cheaper than that.
Right. I'm more concerned about that.
Yeah.
Those like that. Other than that, there are some boot camps that can teach you some specialized skills that you probably can't get your hands on one-on-one. Like certain, for example, like, you're going to be hard-pressed to find a way to get your hands on CrowdStrike without working at a company.
Absolutely.
Hard-pressed to get access to Proofpoint or Tanium.
Yeah.
Like, some of these things are gate-kept, and you will not get access to them unless you work in an enterprise environment. That's the real gatekeeping I talk about. That's why I like Microsoft, in a sense. They'll give you access to Defender. You get access to Sentinel. You probably get access to Threat Explorer or Purview. To where if you now, remember we talking about earlier, people don't know how to simulate real work environments. Now you get with a mentor or a coach to say, okay, I've been in the industry 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
Typically, you probably run into like these top five scenarios we're going to help desk. This is what we're going to build out your environment about, and we're going to cover these things. So now when you go into your interview, you can say, well, I did this and I replicated this, or I created, you know, 15 users, made sure this user had role-based access and they access then creep over to their next role.
Right.
Like all different type of things, like understanding the job. Like the biggest issue that people run into when it comes to the interview and learn all this information is them chaining the information together to make sense to let the interviewer know they understand the full scope of what they're doing.
Yeah.
A lot of times you learn this here, and this here, but they don't know how to connect it.
Yeah. It's literally like a chain link. That's a good mention there. A lot of these, I always mention to folks because, especially around the end of the year, if you are a person that doesn't have an understanding of some of these big name apps, right, one that I mention a lot, which is very niche, now I forgot the name of it, but it's an AI-based chatbot, essentially, where you can automate your intake support process, whereas, you know, you can create frequently based or based on FAQs that your organization may have, you can implement a chatbot that can act as an in-between to answer questions for you, right? Towards the end of the year, it's in your best interest, which is what I used to do a lot, is reach out to some of these sales folks and ask for a demo, right? And in some of those cases, they'll give you like a free, like a 30 or 60 day test instance. And people have seen success with that. But going back to the larger point of that, I think we conflate entertainment for knowledge in a lot of situations. Whereas, transparently speaking, man, sometimes the tech content, even some of the stuff that I make, I feel like, yo, that's a boring vid, but it needs to be said, right? I think there needs to be an in-between where there's true knowledge. And then, like, of course, social media is for entertainment as well. Maybe find a way to blend the two, but don't just because somebody says something. Because you can go and rent a watch. You can go and rent a car real quick to put on the facade. And if that's what you are looking for, just a way to make, period.
That's what people, but that's
more money.
That is the thing. Most people only listen to you if you look a certain way, you drive a certain car,
yeah,
you working remote on the beach or whatever.
That ain't realistic either.
It's not, but that's what people think.
Yeah.
They think a lot of people. Shout out to Nucor. Nucor is a nonprofit ran by my friend Ramala.
Yeah.
And what's the other friend? Was it Kenya or something? I got your name wrong. I'm sorry. I'll correct it. I talked to, they go around and talk to high school kids about getting the STEM, cybersecurity. Yeah. So I was talking to him. And the guy asked me, he said, yo, you a millionaire? Because what they've seen about cybersecurity online is you make a lot of money.
Yeah.
You got all these cars. So I was like, no. I said, but I do know some people that's in cybersecurity are millionaires.
Yeah.
And they were able to do this over a period of time based on investments and other things that they did. So I think it's just important to explain to people, like, hey, this is not the only way, like, I make money.
Yeah.
I do this and that or whatever. And, you know, a lot of times people will make up a lie. Like, imagine, I have a track record. So you know me for the last almost 5 years now. What I did and my experience, you go look it out on LinkedIn. But there'll be new people that come out and say, hey, you know, my first year in cybersecurity, I made, you know, $250,000
yeah,
or whatever. And this year I'm trying to make, you know, $500,000. Let me show you how to scale in cybersecurity, yada, yada, yada. People will come out there and say that. And you just really have to go back and check how long they've been in,
yeah,
what they've did.
Check their LinkedIn.
Anybody who's worked with them,
you can't even find it. Some of these folks be having their link. I ain't gonna put no.
I'm not even gonna say that.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can't really go off that because
they'll lie on there too. Sometimes. Yeah.
I had a situation with a boy where they was advocating for a boot camp program,
yeah,
that one of the guys did. That yes, he did get into cloud,
yeah,
and land two roles. And I said, well, this LinkedIn say he got experience. He was,
yeah,
like, well, don't believe that. And then later on, the guy got on there and said, yeah, I lied about my experience on LinkedIn on live.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, why would you ever admit that you lied about your experience,
yeah,
on live? That same young man had his offer letters on Instagram because,
bro,
we're seeking validation.
Yeah.
So he,
yeah,
wanted to validate, hey, I do got these jobs, which is fine. But, bro, I was able to go find your recruiter and everything on the offer letter. HR person like this. I was like,
yeah,
if I was a person that cared that you got in a fugazi way, I would say, hey, this person lied about the experience. They don't,
yeah,
have it. And there are instances where HR will fire you if you lied about,
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, they
like
send an offer quick, especially today. They'll quickly.
So
you see the DocuSign voided.
I was just like, I can't remember if I reached out to the young man or whatever. But I was like, this dude, this person don't care about you enough to realize that they are using you in,
mm-hmm,
order so how they can make money and so this bootcamp can make money,
mm-hmm,
versus actually just being honest with it.
Yeah. Sometimes too, realistically speaking, you can become a millionaire via them affiliate links, but I think people need to realize, like, when you sign up for these, you click that link, they get paid off of that. You are their tech experience. You're making them a millionaire.
Yeah, so on YouTube, like, we're required to put in the description, hey, some of these links I do get affiliates,
right,
from, whatever.
Yeah.
A lot of people, you know, you kind of assume that, but you,
yeah,
don't know. Like, I'm just up for it as long as you market in a decent way, because,
yeah,
now there's people that go spend their last on this, thinking they finna go live the life you live, not knowing, hey,
this way,
because you had already a big following,
yeah,
you just play the numbers game. Hey, if I got 200,000 followers. If I just get 3% of these people to give in, I could make X amount of money per
So it's very predatory. And you know, one of the greatest pieces of advice I think I got was someone saying to me, everything is spiritual, right? That's where the level of discernment got to kick in. You should really pick these people apart and take a minute to look and evaluate and think to yourself, like, yo, does this feel right?
A lot of people want success and they want the vanity stuff so much.
Yeah.
They can't see past that.
Some people don't care either. And if you don't, that's cool.
They want to be like everybody else. They don't want to be focused on what they have to go through in order to attain it.
Yeah.
So everything, like, because we're wrapping up, guys, everything that you've stated that you went through in your career now has prepared you for where you currently are.
Absolutely. And where I'm going.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of these people want to circumvent that and just get to where you are, where I am, whatever.
Yeah.
And it will not work because you don't have enough tools in a toolbox to handle it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, think about it. You just said, like, you know, the Netflix experience, though good.
Yeah.
You still felt like you weren't equipped to handle it properly because of things you didn't know.
Right.
It'll be the same thing. People don't have email etiquette. They don't know how, they don't have soft skills.
Not only that, bro, to add to that, and which I wanted to say earlier, people that are more experienced than you, going back to the how not to be green in corporate America thought process, right? People that are more experienced than you can smell it on you. They can see it on you. The first inclination you give that you are not competent or experienced in blank, that is an opportunity for exploitation, whether you know it or not.
Oh yeah.
They gonna keep that in their mind and they gonna, yo, I remember Chris, you know, didn't have an understanding of Zendesk when we implemented it last time. I want him out of here. How about we create a new, you know, a container in Zendesk and we ask him to lead it, knowing that he ain't got that experience, and leave him alone with it and see how he do.
And this is the gym. Much like school and work, a lot of the stuff you learn is going to be done off the clock.
Yes.
So if you are struggling with something at work, see if you got Pluralsight or whatever you got. This is where you go seek out these people, these mentors that got this experience, and you learn it on your own.
Yes.
And one of the ways you also could play people is you could play like you don't know nothing. So a lot of times people want to feel smart. Yeah. So you could play like you don't know nothing, but you're really using it to get information out of them.
Yeah.
And then that's when you reverse it on them. Say, yeah. You thought, but I was just, you thought that.
One thing I always did, I know you said we're wrapping up. One thing I always did, when I was, if we would jump into a meeting and we were resolving an incident and the engineer or the principal engineer, whoever owned that platform was in, I would ask if it was virtual, could I record this meeting? If I was getting access to it, I'd ask if I could record the meeting, and I would always keep those things documented. But being able to have them share their screen and walk through these things with an explanation, make sure you ask questions. If people cool with you recording, record those, send them to your personal email and save them on your work site, like BCC yourself on your personal email and keep a report, because I got years of just walk, like personal one-to-one after-hour walkthroughs of, you mentioned Pluralsight, right? I think I got a whole walkthrough that I put up the other day from like my second job, where somebody walked through a full Microsoft 365 tenancy, where they were like, yo, to, you know, attach these multi-tenant, from a multi-tenant organization perspective, you got to do X, Y, and Z. And this is a dude that I worked with that was a Microsoft admin, right? Now I have my own library of instances that I can go back where, you know, I've essentially created my own kind of training modules, right? Definitely do that for sure. And if you at the help desk, for sure, you're in a tier one role. Be reaching out to these folks and asking, like, yo, what do you do? Let me, you know,
that's the benefit you got at help desk. You can see how some got resolved. Yeah. Go find a team. That's how you do it.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. But where can they find you at on all platforms?
Yeah, you can find me on IG at The Tech Disciple. I'm on TikTok at The Tech Disciple. Offering one-on-ones as well. Also follow our nonprofit, Project Ambition, on IG is at Proj Ambition. We essentially are an organization with a focus on providing insight and benefit to members of marginalized communities around corporate America, the realities of corporate America, breaking into industries specific to tech. We also focus on one thing, I know we didn't get to talk about it, but one thing that we also focus on is the faith element, right? Within the workplace, being able to show up boldly as yourself and not, you know, functioning as a person that is, you know, more so on the 48 laws of power side of things, but really functioning in kind of a biblical way in leadership and being able to, you know, function in a way that helps others without having to, you know, go alpha I staff folks in the back. So, yeah, follow our nonprofit as well. hit me up on IG. You looking for a one-on-one, want to chat more. That info is on my IG as well. So, yeah.
Bet, you know, as usual, all this information will be in the description. But I appreciate y'all for rocking with us. This is one of the last in-person episodes of 2024. So, y'all know what to do. Share this out. Comment on here. And, yeah, man, we really going to run it up in 2025. But until next time, until next year, let's stay textual, and we out. Peace.